Talk. It's Tuesday, December.
Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I have a microphone. Dang. A minute past the hour, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, this is bizarre. This is weird. Nothing changes from one night to the next morning, and yet I walk in here, and the audio is completely different from one day to the next. Elves. Oh, sure. Everybody thinks they're cute, and they're benign, and they got blonde hair and pointy ears like in the Tolkien movies. No, they're coming back here and resetting all my gear every night. It's the strawberries, I tell you. I caught them with the strawberries. I fooled them. They knew I found them with the strawberries. Sheesh. Okay. Thank you. Topic in the chat room. You're good, Bob. Yeah. You're good, Bob? Wait a minute. No. Are we sure about that? You're good, Bob? Because I'm not so sure about that. But I think we'll save that for another day. It would have been cute. It would have been really cute. But... Oh, there we go. Okay. 3 minutes past the hour now. And what else is going to go sideways? Really? Do you suppose rat bait works on elves, too? Maybe this is Krampus's helpers and not Santa's. I don't know. Weird. I'm just not used to not having... Oh, screw it. God almighty, never a dull moment. This is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. This is where we live. That's where you go if you want to join in the merrymaking, the real-time madcap extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Also, of course, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/contribute if you want to help keep this on the air. Thank you very kindly to Josh and to Janie for helping to take us out of the deficit we were coming into this evening. So we've only got the evening's regular fundraising to do tonight, which is wonderful, yeah, and very helpful indeed. Thank you, Janie. Thank you, Josh. If you prefer to go with the U.S. Postal Service, of course, the address, which I've been neglecting to give out of late, the address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV25801. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's checks and money orders and That's also a matter of making them payable to the horn and not Bob Kincaid, because I never see him. That's what Boss Man Wayne does. He goes to the echo chamber that is the horn mailbox, and he puts on his spider-proof gloves, and he reaches in, and sometimes those spiders just about chew the gloves right off his hand. It's not just Titanic Tuesday at the horn. The 15th day of December 2015, with only 16 days remaining in poor old 2015. You know, we enter into every new year full of hope that somehow maybe this will be the breakthrough year. Maybe this will be the year that everything gets better. And then by this time of any given year, we're going, poor old, fill in the blank, name of year, 1066. Can you imagine New Year's Eve, 1065? Sitting there, sipping at your wassail in merry old England, pre-Norman England, and who was it? Ethelred? I forget who got shot through the eye at the Battle of Runnymede, and then there's the simple name of the Runnymede. I never liked my mead thick, personally, but maybe I'm just a crank. I think, yeah, 1065 has been a tough year. But I swear, I do believe 1066 will, although they were talking in English that sounded nothing, no. And then 1066 rolls around, and the next thing you know, you got a bunch of Viking half-breed freaks on your shore, led by a fatherless, well, never mind. It's that way every December. And yet somehow, December's evoke in us hope and memory at the same time. Memories of things and times past that were pleasant and good and perhaps even jolly and merry. And hopes. But we're not going to put a lot of stock in hope this evening, quite frankly. I'm not trying to be a curmudgeon or anything, but it's debate night in America again. Oh, God, help me. Please, Jesus. Save us, Bernie. Bernie Kenobi. You're our only hope. Star Wars stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, only 3 days to the big premiere. I imagine we will not be, let's see, this is 16, yeah, it'll be Friday. Marty will not be listening that night because he's going to go see the IMAX premiere of Star Wars. We will expect a full report. No spoilers, please, Marty. But, no, it's debate night in America. And it's not Democratic debate night because we can't have, you know, we got to be careful that we don't have too many debates here among the Democrats, because people might find out that they've got far better ideas than the clowns over on the dangerous, racist, bigoted, sad, sick, freak, misogynistic, Arabophobic, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And just in case you were wondering, in case you're planning on watching, and unless you're just doing it solely for the spectacle, why would you watch it? But yes, Rolling Stone has published the official GOP debate drinking game rules, part 5 for this evening. If you do this with anything stronger than the near beer, you're going to be on the floor in the first half hour. If you can hold up through the first hour, you will eventually pass out, and somebody will write on your face with a Sharpie, watches GOP debates and plays drinking games or something, or maybe they'll asshole. I don't know. But here are the rules, according to Rolling Stone magazine and Matt Taibbi. You'll see real quickly that sobriety is not good. No, there's no way to stay. So, rule 1, the doctor's note rule, Self-explanatory, drink after any riffing on Trump's latest stunt. Number two, the nuke 'em till they glow rule. Drink after any promise to carpet bomb the Middle East or after any attempt to one-up Ted Cruz's recent comments about how, I don't know if sand can glow in the dark, but we're going to find out. What a sad, sour, sorry, miserable, hateful, kind of just plain old-fashioned garden variety textbook shitty human being you have to be to even say something like that. Number four, the climate change denial rule, complaint about the Paris climate change agreement. Shotgun a beer if it comes with a mention of how the nice local weather renders climate change talk meaningless. Yeah, see, that's the thing. It's like 50 degrees outside and the sun's already set. It was sweating weather again today, but then again, I sweat. War on Christmas rule, mention of Red Cups, nativity controversies, and so forth. See what I mean? That's five shots, and those are all five lead pipe cinch guarantees. The Rents Priebus rule, number six, mention of a brokered convention or use of the phrase, let the people decide, in a discussion of RNC Rents Priebus controversy. Double shot if the latter's name is pronounced incorrectly, as, say, perhaps, Rents Penis. Number seven, the George Lucas rule, gratuitous mention of Star Wars. Double shot if it comes with an impersonation or a sound effect, i.e. Cruz does a Yoda voice while threatening ISIS.
Bomb them, we will. Hateful you are. Reproduce you should not.
My Yoda's not what it used to be. Number eight, and this could be enough to wipe out an entire bottle of cheap tequila, the I'm just a simple caveman rule. A candidate mentions that he, she is not a scientist or generally derides higher education before proceeding to make a common sense point, which I will add will probably be wrong and be a lie. Nine, the wet blanket rule, attempt by Kasich to implore his fellow candidates to be more realistic, followed by boos and catcalls from the audience. Isn't he out of money yet? Don't they? Oh, let me guess. Nobody wants him back home in Columbus actually governing the state of Ohio. No, I didn't think so. Go, Kasich, go, and stay gone. Number 10, we're going to skip Rule 10. Salutary mention of Japanese internment, religious registries, or other similar policies. I don't want Gerald getting all full of himself at the beginning of the program. Number 11, the I don't just believe in the American dream, I'm a product of it rule. Anyone talks about how they are the son, daughter, husband, wife of a humble bartender, maid, tow truck driver, whatever, because dream's an opportunity. This isn't a drinking game anymore. This is an exercise in alcohol poisoning. Number 12, the good guy with a gun rule, self-explanatory. Number 13, the empty God platitudes rule, an anti-gun control candidate extends thoughts and prayers to the victims of Paris, San Bernardino, or whatever mass shooting we'll have in the next 10 or 15 minutes. Have we had one today? Did we have a mass shooting today? Are we clear to talk about it? Okay. Number 14, the we're not racist rule. A candidate complains that people with traditional values are being accused of being bigots. Double shot if it's Rubio. Well, it's chug the bottle if it's Cruz then, isn't it? The Carly interrupted rule. Carly interrupts someone or uses a bogus statistic. Double shot if it's that 73,000-page tax code line she continues to send out there at every opportunity. Extra salt on your hand for the tequila shot, if it has anything to do with baby parts. The evergreen rules, always drink in every debate. When it's number 16, Trump brags about how much money he makes. This isn't even a game. Where's the competition? You're just constantly sitting. Maybe that's the purpose. You're just constantly sitting there swilling liquor to keep from completely coming unglued. while watching the madness. 17, anyone says, I'm the only one on this stage who... 18, someone says, anyone on us on stage is better than Hillary Clinton. 19, the crowd breaks into uncomfortable applause at a racist, sexist statement. My God, Matt Taibbi, shouldn't there be a caveat at the beginning of this thing saying you'll be needing a case of, you know, liquor of choice? And you don't want to use the good liquor for this either. This ain't no sipping liquor game. This is Cuervo Guzzler's gin. My God. Let's see. Any candidate, you have to drink if any candidate evokes Nazis, the Gestapo, Neville Chamberlain, concentration camps, etc. It's the etc. that'll bite you. 21, anyone force feeds an Israeli reference into a question where it doesn't belong, also known as the Ann Coulter rule. 22, anyone pledges to take our country back. 23, the Jim Webb rule, candidate complains about not getting enough time. 24, any candidate illustrates the virtue of one of his or her positions by pointing out how not PC it is. And 25, someone invokes St. Reagan. Beware, people, this is an every time rule again. Good God, that's not a game. That's not a game, that's self-abuse. That's just, blech. That's not funny. That's sick. But we recall, and see, this screws up the week's timing. Because, again, this is Titanic Tuesday. Titanic Tuesday is reserved for manifestations of titanic right-wing intellect. Mm-hmm. It comes from long, long, long ago when a right-wing blatherer over at the local... AM radio flickering candle flame. I think it was 2.5 watts at night or something. Watts during the day, mind you. But the flickering, the right wing blatherer with a world class monotone. He could put insomniacs down after just a couple of words. Took a call from one of the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking right-wingers who listens. Hi, Steve. Hey, Kim, it is, you reckon, that there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia. We ain't nowheres near the beach. And I know, because we go every year to Myrtle Beach, and it's long, far, long way away. Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. He replied, the Titanic plates, not the tectonic plates, the Titanic plates. Still no word on the movement of the Titanic fondue pot. Ooh, I don't think we've ever had the fondue pot before. Mm-hmm. So that's Titanic Tuesday, and dear God, we got them all over the place. So, like I said last night when we closed the program, we had some leftovers. So we've got more In Monday leftovers this evening, but they're very tasty. And what is it about a new Star Wars movie that brings out the stupid? Right-wingers will argue over the meaning of Star Wars, which means that occasionally progressive people, good progressive people, intelligent progressive people, will be led to say things that are incredibly, breathtakingly, heartbreakingly dumb about the movie franchise.
Yeah.
So, in this particular instance, we have Melissa Harris Perry. And I know Melissa, and she's a sweet human being, and a good human being, and a smart human being. What caused her to opine about Star Wars and racism? I don't know. I don't, but by God, she did. Mm-hmm. And there's really not much getting around it. Melissa Harris Perry, bless her heart, God love her, has declared that I can barely stand to even mention this. That Star Wars makes her uncomfortable? Huh? Really? Mm-hmm. Star Wars makes Melissa Harris Perry uncomfortable. Because of the way that Darth Vader is portrayed. Oh, help me. Help me, Obi-Wan. You're my only hope. But really, no, it's fact. Rock solid, lead pipe cinch, certain fact. Inescapable. Mind-bogglingly so. Don't know how this happens. And I vetted this. Because we love to use the word vetted lately. I did. I researched this. It's real. Back this past Saturday, Melissa Harris Perry said, "I know why I have feelings, good, bad, and otherwise, about Star Wars. I spent the whole day talking about the Darth Vader situation." There's a Darth Vader situation? I didn't know there was a Darth Vader situation. The part where he was totally a black guy whose name was basically James Earl Jones. While he was black, he was terrible and bad, awful, and used to cut off white men's hands and didn't actually claim his son. But as soon as he claims his son, goes over to the good, takes off his mask, and he's white. Yes, I have many feelings about that. No, really. I feel like a squeaky toy. I just... Because that ain't even how the movie works. No, I'm just sitting here making little forest animal noises. The self-inflicted wounds are the ones that hurt the most. He was terrible and bad, awful, and used to cut off white men's hands. What about the part where he did the whole kids in the hall, "I'm squeezing your head, I'm squeezing your head" thing, and somebody said, "Let him go, Lord Vader," or collapsed a guy's heart inside of his chest. I mean, I don't know. if you don't know that much about it, leave it alone, please. But just for clarity's sake, and I'm sure because there's never any real comprehension, I don't know how it happens, but I get email about the most bizarre stuff. Yeah, there's a chronology. It's not some sort of Faulkner-esque stream of consciousness. No, it's not Star Wars as told by Benji. It has a narrative flow, and yes, Darth Vader tells Luke that he's his father while he's still wearing his black armor. And here's one of the funnest parts. It was only in up until post-production, the voice of Darth Vader had been a Scot, which you don't do very well. But you can understand how after a while you realize, if you're George Lucas, that this doesn't sound much like the evil emperor of the universe. No. Mm-mm. So I hate it when we do things like this to ourselves. Mm-hmm. But it's even better. Okay, so that's annoying and silly. And God knows we need some silly. Don't worry, I'm sure we'll be serious again very soon. I'm absolutely certain there will be a mass shooting involving degrees of horror we have not heretofore even contemplated soon enough, because Merca. But honestly, I mean, that's restaurant quality silly. You've kind of got to confess. And if you don't confess, we'll waterboard your ass. Because freedom and Merca. The greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever, indivisible, under God. Mm-hmm. So it's bad enough when our side gets Star Wars all wrong. How about when the other side gets a little too serious about basically a live-action comic book? A space opera, as it were. I think Gene Roddenberry coined that term. In light of the fact that the name of this website is The Decider, I have decided that this has kind of got to be some serious right-wing crap. News Ninja Gene put me onto it. Maybe it isn't, but it sure sounds like it. Way too much to read. Out loud, because who needs to be read to on the radio? From a website called The Decider, by someone calling him or herself comfortably smug. Maybe it's not, I don't know. Maybe it's not right wing, hard to say. The Radicalization of Luke Skywalker, A Jedi's Path to Jihad. No, really. I think we're overanalyzing things here. I mean, there's Joseph Campbell and the Power of Myth, and I get that, and finding the places where our collective mythos sort of worms its way into our consciousness. Sure, I got that. But you tell me, does this sound wingnut to you, or is this somebody just being cute? With the imminent release of the new Star Wars film, The Force Awakens, many theatergoers are rewatching the original movies to This time, however, they may find themselves surprised by how much the film's characters and themes echo the current war on terror. Then we get a little digression over how the Galactic Empire is actually the good guys and the Rebel Alliance are the bad guys. Yeah, okay, sure. A more focused study, however, is needed to truly understand that the Star Wars films are actually the story of the radicalization of Luke Skywalker, from introducing him to us in A New Hope as a simple farm boy, gazing into the Tatooine sunset, to his eventual transformation into the radicalized insurgent of Return of the Jedi, as one who sets his own father's corpse on fire and celebrates the successful bombing of the Death Star. Each film in the celebrating, bombing, what do we know? By carefully looking for the same signs governments and scholars use to detect radicalization, we can witness Luke's dark journey into religious fundamentalism and extremism happen before our very eyes. Ooh. My takeaway from this really lengthy article, I mean, for what it is, was that Comfortably Smug, the author, has way too much time on his or her hands. When we first meet Luke Skywalker, he's an orphaned farm boy with barely any friends, living with his aunt and uncle, and wanting to join the Galactic Academy like all the other guys his age. You see, Luke didn't become a space terrorist overnight, but he did exhibit signs that would make him a prime candidate for terrorist recruiters. Mm-hmm. Luke is just the kind of isolated, disaffected young man that terror recruiters seek out. Obi-Wan, a religious fanatic with a history of looking for young boys to recruit and teach an extreme interpretation of the Force, is practically salivating when he stumbles upon Luke, knowing he's found a prime candidate for radicalization. Shocked and confused by his onslaught, we haven't gotten to the best part yet. Shocked and confused by this onslaught of terrorist brainwashing, Luke hurries home only to find the charred corpses of his aunt and uncle. The Empire's accidental harming of Luke's Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen can be directly compared to the casualties of President Obama's drone campaign. Yeah, because it's President Obama's drone campaign. Because the dim leader, that sweet, lovable, innocent, pretzel-gagging oaf of a ne'er-do-well, George, dim-son, you know, he never sent no drones up. That was just, you know, that's one of those Kenyan Muslim you slurper wizard innovations. Obi-Wan whisks Luke off to Mos Eisley using a Jedi mind trick to bypass security, knowing full well he will likely appear on numerous terror no-fly lists. After contracting a local drug smuggler for transportation, okay. During the fight, Obi-Wan notices Luke watching and, seeing an opportunity to fully inspire Luke to radicalize, says a Jedi prayer while committing suicide. Can you think of any other groups who try to inspire terrorism by yelling a prayer before a suicide attack? I might have wanted that liquor bottle for this. Once Luke escapes and regroups with the terror sleeper cell, he joins them on an attack mission. As he nears his target, hearing Obi-Wan's words in his mind, Luke closes his eyes, says a prayer, and bombs the space station, killing everyone aboard. Here's the funny. This is the part I love best. It really does. It really is. As The Empire Strikes Back begins, Obi-Wan appears to Luke as an apparition and gives him clear instructions on continuing his radicalization. Luke is ordered to travel overseas to receive training and religious instruction from Yoda, an extremist cleric who runs a Jedi madrasa on Dagobah. Yoda accepts Luke into his religious school, teaching Luke Jedi fundamentalism and guerrilla warfare. Like many extremist mullahs, Yoda demands total adherence to his strict interpretation of the Force and seeks to strip Luke of independent thinking. Yoda's push to radicalize Luke, rob him of an identity, and instill obedience are apparent when at various points he instructs Luke to clear your mind of questions, unlearn what you have learned, and most grimly, do or do not. There is no try. This goes on for paragraphs and paragraphs. Comfortably smug as a government relations professional with a focus on the financial services industry. Well, I think we figured a lot of things out real quick, haven't we? He can be found on Twitter with his musings on all things finance and politics. Good for him. One wonders if Comfortably Smug has ever even read Dune. I mean, Dune actually has the word jihad in it, right? Yeah. The real word, jihad. And there are overt Arabian and more particularly Bedouin overtones to the Fremen. Mm-hmm. Never mind. But so the Melissa Harris-Perry thing was real. And then well, that's not enough. Because, well, after the Melissa Harris-Perry kerfuffle, they had to, the Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, had to run out and find themselves right-wing white lady, or just a white-wing lady, who could tell us all how wrong Melissa Harris-Perry was, because somehow or another, this is worthy of airtime. No, really. You probably have forgotten her, but Janine Turner was the ingenue, I think is the technical term within dramaturgy. She was the ingenue in the, 1990s Northern Exposure, right? Okay, so get the hockey puck already. You're going to want it.
I think of you as a social commentator, and I want your social commentary on this. Two items. A seventh grader banned from school for wearing his Star Wars T-shirt. It shows a stormtrooper holding a gun. That's issue number one. Number two, MSNBC's Melissa Harris-Perry says Star Wars is a racist movie. Just roll this tape and watch this, Janine.
He was totally a black guy whose name basically was James Earl Jones. He was black, he was terrible and bad and awful and used to cut off white men's hands and didn't, you know, actually claim his son. But as soon as he claims his son and goes over to the good, he takes off his mask and he is white. Oh, yes, I have many, many feelings about that.
You want to deal with that, Turner? Star Wars racist because James Earl Jones is the voice of one of the characters and he's black. I mean, I don't get it. Do you?
No, and you know, political correctness is killing our country. Political correctness is going to be responsible for killing more Americans. I mean, this is just overboard completely. And regarding Darth Vader, please, I mean, look, the Bible talks about darkness.
Well, what? The Bible?
This is about evil and good, darkness and light. This doesn't have anything to do with anything else. This is goes back to biblical times. It's been discussed in the Bible. Jesus talks about it. It's about
Star Wars has been discussed in the Bible.
It has nothing to do. You know, evil people traditionally in the movies always wear dark. And
oh my! And this Star Wars is discussed where in the Bible? Wookiee 420. Sand People 714. But that line, political correctness is killing our country. That wasn't a political correctness thing. That was just somebody dribbled LSD on the popcorn thing. As Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, notes, fuck the plea agreement. Right. So this is where we are. But if you if it seems just and look, I mean, I'm sensitive to issues of race, gender, and sometimes we just take it a little too far. Somebody needed to be on set to look at Melissa Harris Perry and go, no, really, you're watching it wrong. It's a horse. It's a space opera. It's a cowboy movie in space. And then we can have the conversation about the cowboy and Indians movies out of Hollywood, and the cleaning up of a genocide. Because I heard, okay, and it was completely out of context, but I heard last night when I was actually tuning in to listen to Malloy. And there's an excerpt of one of the shows on Progressive Voices that plays in the Progressive Voices slot there at the top of the hour, from top of the hour to 06 after. And I forget who was doing it, but they played the clip, and for the same reason that everybody else has played the clip of Count Dickula, you know, Darth Cheney, I mean, Dick Cheney. Star Wars thing gets after it. It's like it burrows right into the neurons. But they were playing the clip of him saying that Donald Trump saying we need to stop the Muslims from coming in, blah, 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 database, registry. What is it? That's not who we are. It's not who we are as a country. And everybody, it was David Pakman, Marty. That's right. That's who it was. Thank you. And if it wouldn't take too long to go and find it, I'd go find the clip. But I hope you'll just trust me on this. So after he says, no, I disagree with Trump, it's not who we are as a country, we can't just bar every Muslim from coming into the country, because then how would the Saudi donors get here to give money to the Republican Party, and how would they come to make sure that their investment in Fox News... No, he didn't say any of those things, but, you pour a little lemon juice on the script and it just pops right up. But toward the end of it, in a larger digression on the nature of immigration, you know, we've had people come to this country all along, and then at the end, Count Dickula says, "When my ancestors came here," and I'm going to do this without the funny voice because I don't want anybody to miss the point. Richard B. Big Time, Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney, before he dicks you, said, "When my ancestors came here, they arrived with the Puritans, and here's the takeaway. Here's the part where I kicked furniture. Here's the part where I started looking for the liquor bottle that still isn't here. My ancestors came here with the Puritans, and there was nobody here. You got that? My ancestors came here with the Puritans, which would mean the 17th century, the early 17th century, you know, 1620, Plymouth Rock, a little bit later, Massachusetts Bay Colony, et cetera, et cetera. My ancestors came here with the Puritans, who, by the way, were a bunch of dangerous religious fanatics. My ancestors came here with the Puritans, and there was nobody here." Now, by nobody, what he means is millions and millions of people who had been successfully living on this continent and the other continent to the south of us for something on the order of 15, 20,000 years or more. Mm-hmm. And so I sat there listening, and I was going, what, nobody's going to pick this up? Nobody's going to run with that ball? We're just going to let it roll haplessly around in the middle of the field and until somebody blows the whistle and we set up the next play? When my ancestors came here with the Puritans, and there was nobody here. Because in that moment, an entire genocide was erased. And I, and of course, this was something that was said in conversation with Hugh Hewitt. Hewitt. Right. And so you wouldn't expect Hugh Hewitt to say anything about it. Did anybody, I mean, did you see coverage of it? Because everybody who remarked on this that I read about or saw or whatever, were fixated on that line about how, you know, how bad, and the trope was, how bad is it when you find yourself agreeing with Dick Cheney? And I guess it was so stunning that nobody heard the rest of it, the part about, and when my ancestors got here with the Puritans, there was nobody here. Because there were millions of people here. It's just that the Cheneys and others like them erased those people through the processes of disease and outright murder. The Cheneys and the Kincaids. Don't like to lump us together, but it's a fact. So if you get a chance to hear that clip, or if you go and look it up, pay attention. That's actually important. And I refer to that because the cowboy and Indian motif of Hollywood, again, is a whitewashing of a larger crime. Okay. This is pretty titanic stuff, and we've got, oh my God, we've got so much of it. So let's see here. A little bit of mail rolling in. Marty simply asked, Janine Turner, social commentator, in which reality? Oh, that's the one where Spock and Kirk have the pointy beards, Marty. Steve in New York says, Star Wars and the Bible. It's okay, so I'm a Catholic Christian, but I know damned well that people pondered good and evil independent of the Bible. Well, yes, they did, Steve. As a matter of fact, you're 100% correct. They were contemplating it not only independent of the Bible, but long before the people who wrote the Bible ripped off most of the stories from other previous epics, like the Epic of Gilgamesh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of good and evil in there. There's a lot of moral questioning going on in the whole Gilgamesh, Enkidu, absolutely. Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. Mm-hmm. And when the walls fell. With regard to Melissa Harris-Perry, Steve notes, okay, what she's saying may be just a bit of a stretch, but destroying America and guns and kids needing to learn self-defense during the inevitable active gun situation in our goddamn elementary schools is just okie-dokie? Yeah, it is. That's not just okie-dokie, Steve. That's patriotic. That's what it means to be a God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, homosexual Merkin. Meanwhile, Robert in Australia points out, subject line, Darth Vader and torture. In the first Star Wars, Darth Vader tortures Princess Leia. It happens off screen, but we assume no information was forthcoming, and so much for the Force being useful. Ooh, I didn't think about that. In the second Star Wars, Darth Vader tortures Han Solo for no other reason than to get Luke's attention. Empire and torture. It's all good. And this is where America is at? You can only discuss politics in relation to movies? Well, yeah, we are. We're Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. We can only talk about things in metaphor. That's why Idiocracy is set 500 years in the future, so Mike Judge could actually talk about the present.
Why, you don't got no tattoo?
Mm-hmm. Robert says, God knows what you'll make of Independence Day 2 resurgence due 2016. Oh, I'm scared to even think about it. Horrified. All right, let's finish up real quick and see what this this walking compendium of wisdom incarnate, Janine Turner, has been washed up actress, has to say. I mean, you're not when you're showing up to do segments on Fox. I mean, you don't. It's not like the dance card is full. You're not sitting in the trailer on the set, screaming that the Logan berries are bruised and your champagne isn't bubbly enough. No.
And the good people are in white. The evil people come up on the black horses. The good people come up on the white horses. I mean, you know, this is darkness and evil. This has nothing to do with it. This kind of rhetoric, Varney, is what's ruining our country and putting us in this clear and present danger, which, you know, I believe states can take this back into their own hands according to Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3 of the United States Constitution.
Wait a minute. Turner, hold on a second. State that again. Which clause and which part of the Constitution?
Okay, I stumbled across this when I was dealing with health care, but in the Compact Clause
she deals
of the United States Constitution, Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3, it talks about that states cannot come together to do a compact without consent of the Congress. By the way, there's no consent of the president necessary. And yet, it says, there's this little thing that says they have to have consent of the Congress to come together unless the states are invaded or there is imminent danger. And then they don't have to get the consent of Congress. So as far as I'm concerned, we are in imminent danger. Yeah. We are in clear and present danger. We're beyond imminent. So the states can legally, constitutionally come together to defend people, these 30
Janine,
governors.
Janine, shut up, Janine. Thank you. You know what that's about? That whole imminent danger thing is about? That's another one of those clauses that's in the Constitution that was put there by the dear old fellas from down round places like South Carolina and North Carolina and Georgia, who said, mercy seeks whatever. What about if and we need to work together because all of the darkies has arose up and tried to kill their godly, Christ-inspired masters? But of course, Janine Turner wouldn't know that, because Janine Turner is a stump. But really, or maybe some states would have formed a compact together. Say maybe Pennsylvania and New York to send a militia out westward to kill off some of those people who weren't there when Dick Cheney's Puritan ancestors got here and there was nobody here, only there was. Because that did happen, you know. That happened quite often. Yeah, I know. Carol asks, how high was she? Dude. She probably was like, you know, waiting to just get off camera because they probably lured her on set with a bag of Cheetos. Roger in Oregon, ye olde Angrish in her Bible. You probably missed it because of all those archaic spellings in the Bible, you know, for those that like to read it in the original Angrish. The section on fasting speaks of starve rewards, Star Wars. Let's not confuse the issue any further by mentioning that fasting from dawn to dusk on every day of Ramadan thing. No, let's don't. Those Bronze Age cultures, so they had a thing about, I don't know, maybe you go hungry every now and then to remind yourself of the last famine or something. Ay, ay, ay.
Strong the stupid is.
But it's like this for the rest of the night. I'm sorry. It's turtles all the way down. It really is. Might be a little bit rough. But as far as Titanic intellect, oh no, full steam ahead. Absolutely. And we got lots and lots and lots of Titanics. Where the debates are concerned, Robert dropped a note earlier and said, we may or may not still have televised debates during elections here in Australia. I stopped watching broadcast television 10 years ago, so I wouldn't know. I do recall watching one. Boring. That's a very good question, Blown Passon, which is why I'm going to ignore it and talk about something else for 3 minutes. It was classic Yes Minister and classic Yes Prime Minister. British comedy series about politics. Watch it if you've never seen it. I long for the day, says Robert, when I can vote for policies. Improve medical care for all Australians? Yes or no? Yes. Spend $25 billion on fighter planes that we don't need? Yes or no? No. Triple the amount of money we pay politicians because if you pay peanuts, you get monkeys? Yes or no? No. Oh, that's great. If you pay peanuts, you get monkeys. Hire the monkeys. They'll do a better job. And let's face it. Whatever they say in the debate goes out the window with the baby, the bathwater, and granny after the election because reasons. You guys are so good. You guys are so very good. But it does. And we've got a prophecy moment in this evening's Titanic Tuesday, if I can just maintain the presence of mind to get to it. We do. We got all kinds of fun stuff coming up. It's 4 minutes before the hour, so we'll take a little break. And, of course, it being Tuesday, the 15th of December, it's Green News Report time. So that'll be fun, too. But, hey, Jeanine Turner, washed-up actress, this is for you. It's a long-distance dedication from the horn because you went out and read you some Constitution and learned you about some interstate compacts. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's... because edumacation, right? Mm-hmm. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. You knew this was on the way, didn't you?
It's Tuesday, December 15, 2015.
Je regarde la salle. Je vois que la réaction est
out of the room, I see that the reaction is positive. I see no objections. The Paris Agreement is adopted.
Green News Report, special coverage. United Nations climate talks, an historic agreement for the planet and human civilization to meet the challenge of climate change.
Our Green News Report, Paris Agreement, special coverage. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Our work here and now to give future generations cleaner air and cleaner water and a more sustainable planet.
Yeah, but if climate change is a hoax, all that clean air and clean water will be a total waste of time. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it seemed like it would never happen. It seemed like 200 nations could never come together to agree on anything, much less agree unanimously, to curb greenhouse gases that cause global warming. Is it my imagination or is this an historic moment?
Oh, it's definitely historic. And of course, what happens after will determine just how historic. And you're right. Nearly 200 nations voted unanimously on Saturday for the landmark Paris Agreement. It's a framework for global action over coming decades to cut the greenhouse gas emissions that cause dangerous global warming. At the White House, President Obama acknowledged that the accord by itself won't solve climate change, but he called it a turning point in world history.
This agreement represents the best chance we've had to save the one planet that we've got. This agreement sends a powerful signal that the world is firmly committed to a low carbon future, and that has the potential to unleash investment and innovation in clean energy at a scale we have never seen before. So I believe this moment can be a turning point for the world.
So what was agreed to? For the first time ever, all countries commit to limit global temperatures to, quote, well below a threshold of 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial times and to pursue efforts aiming for 1.5 degrees Celsius. That's a target that was thought to be politically impossible just weeks ago. So while a target of 1.5 degrees Celsius is still dangerous, it is less risky than 2 degrees Celsius, and it will still be very challenging to meet. Countries agreed to peak emissions as soon as possible, ramping down to zero carbon emissions by the end of the century, and all nations have agreed to report on their progress every 5 years and to ratchet up their targets according to their capabilities. Rich nations will assist with financing, mobilizing private investment, and also contributing at least $100 billion to a global climate fund to help developing nations build renewable energy infrastructure and to prepare for the consequences of climate change. The deal, once ratified, is legally binding, but the targets themselves are not. That was an incentive to be ambitious without fear of punishment should countries fall short. And for the U.S., voluntary avoids review by the U.S. Senate.
So this treaty moves forward with the signature of the president, with or without the U.S. Senate, with or without the climate change deniers that now run Congress.
That's exactly right. In Paris, Secretary of State John Kerry called on the private sector to step up with innovation.
We are sending literally a critical message to the global marketplace. Because of 186 nations saying to global business in one loud voice, we need to move in this direction, and that will move investment.
According to climate scientist Michael Mann, author of the famous hockey stick graph on the broadcast this week, now the hard work really begins.
It's difficult to actually understate the significance of this agreement. I think we are witnessing the end of the age of fossil fuels and the beginning of a new age of a clean global energy economy. There's no question it's going to require dramatic action. This is just the beginning. The hard work is ahead. It is doable. It's physically possible, and I think there's evidence that we are starting to garner the will.
Michael Mann told me he was very optimistic about the future, optimistic, happy, obviously, about this agreement, but it's still a question of political will, he points out. And right now, in this country, in the middle of a presidential election, when you have every single Republican candidate is a climate change denier, All I can say is it's a good thing that this agreement does not count on the Republicans to move forward. Instead, we count on the rest of the world for sanity, apparently.
And keep in mind that because it's voluntary, the next president could very well dismantle it. This is not just a crossroads for this country. This is a crossroads for the world.
Well, a path, as they say, is built one stone at a time. One great big stone was laid in this path in Paris after 21 years of work. Let's see if we can build on it from here. For much more on our special coverage today and the rest of the stories we didn't have time for, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
How about that? Great minds think alike, I guess. 7 minutes past the hour. This is the horn for Titanic Tuesday. And I mentioned that all we had was our usual evening's fundraising goal of $200 to go. And we still have our usual evening's fundraising goal of $200 to go. That's 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 and a quarter. Is that, have I got it? I don't know. But anyway, if you'd like to help us keep the bills paid and keep all this on the air, that's how you do it. Head on radionetwork.com/contribute. And thanks again to all of our subscribers. And we're always looking for new ones. Someday we'd like to get to $410 a month subscribers or any combination thereof. And then I'll just shut my mouth about fundraising. Won't have to mention it on the program anymore. Won't that be fun? And yes, there is a premium out there. Bumper stickers for everybody who subscribes. Courtesy of our buddy Scott over in Sweden. As far as Star Wars is concerned, I always thought, okay, obviously the Lord of the Rings is much older than Star Wars. And the Lord of the Rings is pretty clearly a Christ allegory. And so I always thought that the Star Wars, I always thought George Lucas was ripping off a whole lot of different sci-fi and fantasy traditions without having to pay for them, of course. You know what I mean? Frodo loses a finger. Luke loses a hand. Villain is name is sort of this faceless monstrosity. Right, the villain is the eye of right. But let's just leave that alone because we've got other right-wing fish to fry, as it were. I said that we had some semi-prophetic action going on this evening. By the way, Thomas over at FYINation.com, FYI Live, and some say his program, tells me, yes, the debate the Las Vegas pageant, will they be wearing the big silly headdresses? I don't know. Would it make it more interesting? Absolutely. Begins at around 8 on Chicken Noodle News. Shall we check in? It is Titanic Tuesday. There's no maybe about it. That's going to be one great big Titanic intellect generator. It's like the Large Hadron Collider of right-wing stupid. Yeah, I think I've read that somewhere. Marty pointing out, as for where George went for inspiration, he was really went to Japan, mostly from the films of Akira Kurosawa, again, whom he could rip off without having to pay. By the way, a note coming from Roger. My Aramco handbook produced to bring American workers to the oil fields In the revised edition published July 1st, 1968 by Arabian American Oil Company, Dhahran, Saudi Arabia, it speaks of miraculous scientific advances in the control of malaria by spraying all the nooks and crannies of buildings with DDT, page 167. The culture and customs section includes a chapter titled The Religion of Islam. It explains that Islam is a religion of submission to the will of God, page 227. The Arabs as well as the Jews regard Abraham as their patriarch. According to Arab tradition, the Arabs descended from Abraham's first son, Ishmael, while the Hebrews descended from his second son, Isaac. This tradition agrees with the account in the book of Genesis. The Arabs sometimes are called Ishmaelites. According to Muslims, elements of their religion were revealed through a long line of prophets, including Abraham, Ibrahim, Moses, Musa, and Jesus, Isa. But the full and final revelation was given to Muhammad and later was embodied in written form as the Quran. Roger notes, you know, that sounds a lot like how we're told the Book of Mormon came to be. I wonder who we could be. We could ask about that. Well, see, that's the thing, Roger. Back in the era when the Book of Mormon came to be, there was a bit of a vogue for the Muslim world in the United States. And as a consequence, a sort of a fad developed. And people actually read the Quran in the early to mid-19th century in the United States. And so what Joseph Smith did is he took elements of Islam and elements, obviously, of the Old Testament and mixed in some Jesus, and bang, Book of Mormon. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Mormon church is run by prophets. And like I said, we've got a little prophecy moment going on here. Remember last night, the clip from the creepy dude who was going to teach children to go after gunmen, staplers, right? Remember that? And we were horrified? Yes? And we all sort of began to postulate how things might go, you know, really wrong in a situation like that. Mm-hmm. Didn't even have to wait a day. I asked earlier if there had been any mass shootings. No, not today, I think. I hope. But there was a shooting, but it was earlier this month. It was out in Modesto, California. Wine country, isn't that? And Philip Rushing is a gun safety instructor in Modesto, California. He runs something called the... Wait a minute, I think we're going to need some reverb for this. Personal Protection Institute. Absolutely. There's just freedom flying all over the place at the Personal Protection Institute, apparently. This kind of had Save for Prayer Meeting Wednesday on it, but it also doesn't, because, I mean, this is just Titanic. Tom Smith, who is the pastor at the House Modesto, I'm assuming, yeah, Modesto. He took one for the team on December the 5th. Philip Rushing from the Personal Protection Institute was teaching a class on personal protection. And he was using a prop gun, a rubber, what is referred to as a rubber dummy gun. Say that several times quickly, sober, because you won't do it drunk. And the class was near to being over when instructor Philip Rushing put away the dummy gun and then put his own real live Second Amendment remedy, freedom protector, back on his hip where he could have it there close to hand if and he needed to stop some sort of dreadful ISIS terrorist there in the frozen foods down to the Wally World. But there's always a complication. So one of the students there at the Personal Protection Institute said, protection specialist Rushing, could you show us again how we was supposed to go about de-arming somebody, please, pretty please? Because I didn't get that last part, I don't think. Didn't. And it ain't entirely clear to me. If and you don't mind, go over it again, would you? Well, yes, of course, I'll be happy to. This is, after all, a Personal Protection Institute. And we don't want anybody walking away from here who doesn't know how to personally protect themselves. Now, I'm going to need somebody to be the bad guy and rush me. You can see where this is going, can't you? And Pastor Tom Smith of the House Modesto, being a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, Christian, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, said, I will, let me, personal protection instructor Philip Rushing, I want to. Well, okay. Pastor Smith, you just come right up here, okay? Now, I want you to rush me like you're a bad guy. Because the person wanted to go over that part where he protected himself against somebody coming after him with a knife some more. And so Pastor Tom Smith, in a moment of life imitates art, rushed, really putting his all into it, rushed the personal protection instructor, Philip Rushing. Rushing? See, it all just sort of weaves back and forth. At which point, personal protection instructor Rushing pulled his freedom protector and shot Pastor Tom Smith with a real bullet and not a dummy gun. Although I guess you could argue that maybe it was still a dummy gun, wasn't it? The reporting from the Modesto Bee says that Pastor Tom Smith of House Modesto, which sounds like it's probably a mega church, suffered a gunshot wound to his waist just above the hip and underwent surgery. His church issued a statement on Facebook that said Smith was still in, quote, much pain pulling through the physical therapy. Meanwhile, who is Philip Rushing of the Personal Protection Institute? Well, he's got 43 years of martial arts study and 33 years as an instructor, and he teaches combative encounters and firearms and knife training. Dan Gray, owner and firearms instructor at Trident Firearms Academy, who knew, said, if you're a firearms instructor long enough, you're going to see accidents happen. But he did, however, note that a live weapon should never have even been in the classroom. And that means that Dan Gray probably hates America, because that's the one place you want live firearms is in the classroom, because freedom. Right? Because otherwise it's a gun-free zone, and your terrorists are just going to want to come right there because they know ain't nobody got no gun. Like I said, life imitates art. Sure does.
You, Mr. Apricot!
Harrison!
Mr. Harrison, come on me with that banana, and come on, attack me with it, as hard as you like, come on! No! Put something into it, for God's sake! Hold it like that! Scream! Now, come on! Come on, attack me! Come on!
you shot him?
He's completely dead. You shot him.
I have now eaten the banana. The deceased, Mr. Apricot, is now disarmed.
You shot him. You shot him dead.
Why, he was attacking me with a banana.
Well, you told him to.
No, I'm only doing my job. I have to show you how to defend yourself against fresh fruit.
And pointed sticks.
Shut up.
If we wait long enough, some right-winger, some Republican, some birther, deather, ninther, tenther, bagger, booger-eater, bircher, libertarian, what have you, one, it's the infinite monkeys and infinite typewriters, and one of them's going to write Hamlet thing. If you wait long enough, sooner or later, some American Republican will reenact every single piece of comedy that John Cleese ever came up with, mocking authoritarian right-wing types in the UK. And that's one of them. Oh, my Jesus. But at least, Pastor Tom Rushing of House Modesto is not pining for the fjords just yet. He is not an ex-parrot. He has not joined the choir bleeding eternal. No. This stuff just writes itself. Oh. And it goes, you know, on and on and on. There's a story that Carol Baker brought to my attention. And it has to do with the integrity of the home, shall we say. And it's the story of a person who was simply going about the business of minding his own business when the police blew into his house. And just came roaring into through the back door into the kitchen, something like that, yeah. And people tend to respond to that, you know, not well, having one's home broken into. So the guy goes into the kitchen to find out what's going on, and they shoot his dog. And then they shoot him. Because freedom, because terrorism, because national security, because community policing. Ah, here's the problem. They were the no-knock search that they were executing the police. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had the wrong address. They weren't even in the right house. Here's the fun part. Under a long line of cases that goes back to a little something called U.S. v. Leon, the police can avoid even legal liability. The police can avoid having to pay a nickel, not even so much as a penny, of the damages for the harm that they caused, as long as they... So what happens after... Broke down the door of the wrong house, and you shot the wrong dog, and you shot the wrong guy, right? Oh, gee, Sarge, sorry. But hey, did you mean to knock open the wrong door, shoot the wrong dog, and shoot the wrong guy? Did you mean to do that? Well, shucks, no, Sarge. So, fellas, were you acting in good faith? Well, absolutely we were acting in good faith, Sarge. You know we always act in good faith. All right, good. We're covered. No, really. As long as the police say they're acting in good faith, all's well. Everything's just fine. Mistakes will be made. There's an even better part. The two cops were so, what's the phrase I'm looking for? They were so consumed with their law enforcing that they then shot each other. Boys, did you shoot each other in good faith? Well, heck, Sarge, we don't know how to shoot each other in anything but good faith. Give me the rest of the bullets, boys. Aw, Sarge. Wolverines. Really? And I mean, listen. The rest of the night is like this. I'm just warning you. By the way, the pageant actually won't start until 8:30 over at Chicken Noodle News, so we're going to have to, we'll just have to muddle through. Jack in Shreveport with a note says, gun rushers, wouldn't it be better to rush a shooter while their gun is still in its holster? Oh, wait, but that would probably just be a lawful gun owner. See how we get in. Because we always have to default to the idea that they're good guys with guns, because they're all good guys with guns until they pull the trigger and become bad guys with guns. They're all lawful gun owners, presumptively, until they pull the trigger and become awful gun owners. See how it works? Sure. One more little something, and by the way, the lines are open if you want to jump in. We got somebody on the stress line, but if you'd like to get in via the Skype to Skype, oh, no, wait, we got somebody over there, too. Okay, so I'm not going to do another, okay, in the order in which they were received, we'll go over to the line one and check in with, I bet that's Todd. Hey, Todd.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
I'm good. How about you?
Good.
You're sounding just awesome.
Are you being sarcastic?
No, I'm not. Great, clean audio.
Oh, I'm glad you gave me some feedback on the non-feedback. Okay. Listen, there's so much stuff that you had me laughing, and then I got all depressed. I think. Like,
well, you know, this program's just a 10-year mood disorder, okay? I mean, it is.
Well, I mean, sometime within the past couple weeks, I remember seeing Melissa Harris Perry on her show covering Star Wars on that issue.
Well, no. And, well, okay, there was that, but then prior to that, she compared black people to Wookiees. She said the Wookiees are the black people in the movie. I don't.
See, you know what? Maybe, I think somebody must be giving her some ecstasy or something. Something's going on. No, something's not right. I can't. You can't make any right out of that. That's crazy. I mean, the best I could offer her would be to say, okay, you know, like for centuries, you know, dark means terrible, and black people are dark, so black people are bad, and it's still white against black. But I mean, that's so simplistic, and especially for a Star Wars, you know. And plus the fact, I think she just got somebody just told her that, I think, and she just maybe read the clip notes. She did not. Star Wars was a deep movie. You had to watch it a few times. I mean, the first time you watch it, I mean, when I was a kid, you know, for the effects.
Well, sure. And you know what Marty said a little bit ago is the more I've sat here pondering as I was talking, and it makes sense because if indeed George Lucas did take a lot of his ideas from maybe Akira Kurosawa, than seeing Obi-Wan Kenobi as a Ronin, you know, amassed because of the decimation of the Jedi, seeing him as a masterless samurai. Yeah, it really does work, doesn't it?
Exactly. Well, it fits on a lot of different levels. It fits on many different levels in terms of, you know, if you have any knowledge of, you know, philosophy or religion. Yeah, you know, but she just, you know, it was a strange, and it's so strange coming from her. I don't know what's going on. I don't know. Who knows? It's freakish.
I look for simple answers where they are available, Todd. And in this case, I think it's a matter of, yeah, for instance, the hashtag for on Twitter for Melissa Harris Perry is Nerdland. And I think she's trying to live up to her nerd street creds by offering some different angle on Star Wars. I mean, I like her. She's fun to watch. She's intelligent. And some, you know, this would be like maybe me talking about the more nuanced aspects of pre-Columbian Venezuelan novel writing or something. I just got no basis for it.
No, exactly. It's like she has so many other things to offer. It's very surprising that something like that would come out of her. Because it's, I mean, you just can't make any right out of that. That's all I can say. You can't. So I just, you know, she'll get feedback. I'm quite sure she's been getting feedback.
Yeah, but the idea that Fox then riffs on it, on the idea that it's, you know, political correctness is ruining America, and somehow or another, because Melissa Harris Perry said something silly about Star Wars, that we need an interstate compact to fight Muslims. Even the bad brown acid won't do that to your mind.
No. No, and you know, it's, I don't know that there's anything else. I don't know. It's just crazy. But I just was like listening to your show from yesterday, and it just, you know, when you started talking about, I'm a graduate of Friends schools, and so I was a little bit shocked because they're very liberal. You know, when you know, you did the story when Friends Select decided not to let 11th graders read.
I mean, do you know where that school is?
Absolutely.
Because
there's different Friends schools. Now, see, Montgomery County is in suburbs, right? You have Friends Central, which is right in downtown. That's downtown Philadelphia. Friends Select is out in the suburbs, out in Montgomery County. But they're both Friends schools. They're both very affluent. Now, I went to the, you know, because I was born and raised in Philly, but I went to a boarding Friends school up in New York State, upstate New York. But we would actually, they're all in the same circuit. So, you know, I was in athletics, so we'd all play. You know, we would come down here to play. I would, you know, go down there to play. But my point is that even then, you know, we had a really extensive, it was a great reading list that we had in literature and English. You know, we had the full Norton anthology, Catcher in the Rye, you know, all the classics. But I do remember that for Huckleberry Finn, there was a two-page document stating that, you know, some of the notions in here, blah, 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 were, you know, had people would say it at that time in the 80s, product of the era. Be quiet. Product of the era. Okay, that's what they would say, like, you know, read it in context. You know, at 11th grade, you know, if the instructors in your school feel like you are a person to read this book, this is just bullshit.
There's always going to be somebody that wants to go after Huckleberry Finn. You know, in the 19th century, they wanted to go after it because that was sickening, the way you have a full-grown black buck being friends with a perfectly decent little misguided white boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just makes me, that's one of those, I got to shower in bleach after the program things that I just even said that. But I mean, but there's stuff out there, and that word, I don't use it okay? I don't use it. And even in the context that we're discussing it here, I'm a child of my era, and I find the word, I was taught to think that word absolutely repugnant and repulsive in any context whatsoever outside literary and journalistic and perhaps scientific. But the word exists. And as a you know, you went to the schools you went to. I was a child of the public schools in Northwest Alabama, and I remember ninth grade Latin when you learn your colors. Okay, albus or alba is white. Okay,
right.
Black is niger, and no matter how many times the country that's N-I-G-E-R. No matter how many times the for-profit media tries to make it Niger, you know, the way that, who was it on the program talking about, I think it was Nick from up in Minnesota who said, you know, up here in Minnesota we call Target Tarjay, that, you know, we're going to avoid saying, but it's N-I-G-E-R, there's a very famous, it's supposedly the founding place of Rome, and it's the Lapis Niger. And it is what it is, and that word is what it is, and that's how you pronounce it, and you can't get around it.
No.
But it's the use of that word. It's not in the, it's not the relationships, it's not the young and tender age of Huckleberry Finn. It's the use of that word that makes people react in a knee-jerk fashion, Todd, and say, well, you know, we all have precious little children reading it. I mean, that word.
Yeah, but see, I have a real problem when people start trying to sanitize history. History is history. It is what it is. You can't make it right. You can't make it wrong. It is what it is. And I mean, so if they're going to do that, they must.
So Pennsylvania geography lesson for me tonight. Where is the Lebanon Valley?
I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite sure. I believe it's mid-state, upper mid-state, I believe. But I heard you talk about Lebanon.
Yeah, because they got to get rid of, they got to change the name of Lynch Hall.
Yeah.
Because it makes the kids, the young scholars, uncomfortable.
See, some of these things are just too far. And you know, this segues into these incidents where, especially, you know, like I'm in South Carolina now, and you got these Confederate monuments everywhere, and every building's named after a slaveholder. And my best answer to this solution that people are having a lot of problems with would be, you can't take their names off. Just have maybe an addendum plaque, say, you know, and this person was a slaveholder, and this, you know, blah blah blah. These are the views that they held, because it is a part of history. Now, I mean, that's all I could offer on that. But I don't know. I mean, this country is what we are. We're a painful fix and start.
Did you notice that in talking about both of these, we have both managed to talk about these two issues without using the term political correctness? Because it's not a matter of political correctness. Political correctness is a term that right wingers use when they've been caught saying nigger.
Exactly. Essentially. See, exactly. You know who that's fat ass motherfucker. That fat-ass person he's the one who actually got that term. Everybody, you know.
Oh, the oxymoron?
Correct.
Yeah.
You remember when he was in his heyday? I know somebody wants to get on, but in the 80s, when he was in his heyday, you know, they would actually, like, close down a room so that people could sit in there at lunch and listen to his hatred and whatnot. But I don't know what are you going to do about this?
Well, that's the thing, I was going in that direction, Todd. We both managed to talk about that without saying, "Oh, yeah, it's because of political correctness." No, this is a matter of youth being perhaps a little misguided and perhaps being in a little greater need of teaching and wisdom growth. Whereas when the right wing complains about political correctness, it means that they want to be just pig-eyed, mean, and Neanderthal. Poopy head! See, we can't call people poopy head no more. It's politically incorrect to call people poopy head. Poopy head!
Right. Yeah, see, you know what?
Political correctness, complaints over political correctness only cover for their desire to be fucking mean.
Right. And they get the same look in their face when you ask them, why do you think you have to carry a gun everywhere you go? And they get that dumb look on their face. The same look they get when you ask them a simple question about, you know, what the GOP is doing, and you know it's wrong, and you know they're lying, and they're like, well, don't talk about that. You know, stop living in the past. I'm like, well, you know we're all in this trouble because of Bush, but, you know, it's that same look.
Well, and it's a, I don't know if it's a dumb, in some cases, if you ask him, you know, why do you think you need that gun, that glazed over look can also be the look of someone who is in the throes of an orgasmic ecstasy. Because if you ask him, why do you need the gun, then they start thinking, and then he's going to come in, and I'm going to see him, and I'm going to get down behind the freezer unit, and I'm going to peek out around, and I'm going to pull my Freedom Protector, and I'm going to kill him dead, and I'm going to walk up, and I'm going to blow the smoke out of my barrel, and I'm going to put my Freedom Protector back in, and they're all going to run up to me, and they're going to say, you are a Second Amendment hero, you have saved the day, God bless America, why can't we have more Americans all, and then he has to reach for a tissue. I mean, this is, it's the same scene, it's the BB gun scene out of the early part of A Christmas Story. Wait a minute, the little kid with the BB gun in Christmas Story, isn't he shooting at Black Bart?
Oh, come on, stop. He might be. Well, Black Bart, well, that was the Cold War, maybe.
But, I mean, that's set, like, in the late 40s, early 50s, isn't it? Christmas Story.
Okay, Cold War wouldn't start till.
Oh, what? I think we're onto something. Maybe I can get my star turn in the for-profit media if I talk about the racist overtones of A Christmas Story. This would be the time to do it, wouldn't it?
Oh, I don't know. You better check in with Hasselbuck.
Oh.
But, you know, this one thing has really bugged me. As somebody who's been a teacher and been in schools and talking about these guns, and I mean, think about it. When you go to the range, there is a backstop. There has to be a backstop. Because what would happen with those bullets when you fire a weapon?
Right, because those targets that are sitting there, they don't just put those up against somebody's house.
Correct. I mean, and the reason I brought it sounds so simplistic, but I thought about it. I said, this is the simplest way I can explain this. So these people are saying, no, it's okay. Matter of fact, me and all my neighbors, yeah, we want to be in the school because when those terrorists come, we're gonna go to our ankle and pull our gun out, right? And we're gonna shoot these people in. But when we miss, but no, we're not gonna miss because we're not. And then there's bullets flying around everywhere. I mean, I've been around people shooting guns, right? What happens is that when you hear a shot and you have a gun and other people are shooting, people freak out. They think they're going to be cool, but they're not. They're not. And they freak out and they shoot everywhere because they don't know where the gun is coming from. They don't know where the shots are coming from. That is what happens. That's the fact. That is the fact. And then you can don't believe me. You don't have to believe me. Do the research. And most people, a handgun is very difficult to hit your target with a handgun. It's very difficult.
They are notoriously inaccurate. That's why they were used for dueling. In their earliest manifestations, you know, pistols at 12 paces.
Right.
Because if it was at 25 right. paces, you'd be standing there shooting at each other all day before one of them hit.
They pack a lunch, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Between that and the two means right now for me that are killing me from the GOP, this gun nonsense. Because if they had their way, honest to God, we'll all be dead because I'm going to be scared to go out of the house soon, the way these people carry guns around here.
Well, but I mean, Carol, anyway. Carol Baker's not kidding when she says that she orders everything in and tries to, and tries to and tries to avoid larger society as much as possible. It's not a joke. You can get groceries through Amazon.
Yeah.
And if you're smart about it and you got Amazon Prime, you can probably get them for cheaper than you get them in the grocery store.
Well,
and that way you don't, and that way in a place like Hooterville or here in West Virginia, I don't have to, you know, you don't have to worry about some guy. And again, I want to be clear. Some of these people are competent shooters, I presume. I don't know how many. I would guess a lot fewer than we would like to admit. But accidents happen. I mean, how many times have you been turning the corner in the Wiggling Pig, and just bang, you have a head on with another buggy? What happens if the buggy drags? What happens if your open carry freedom protector gets caught on somebody else's buggy, and then there's a trigger, and you bang?
Anything.
It's
concrete floor.
Yeah, I mean, no, these aren't plush carpeted grocery stores. Maybe that's the next step. Maybe we don't get the hoverboard from Back to the Future. Maybe we get hover buggies so that we can have nice, soft, springy floors in when freedom protectors fall out of purses and pouches and waistbands and holsters, and that way people don't get shot. Because obviously it's not the firearm's fault, it's the hard floors. See?
Well, see, you had to bring that up. No, this is what the gun sales thing, when you start to hear these stories, right, about people who are firearms instructors and they're in the schools and they misfire. And misfire means that they discharge their weapon in the damn school when they're not supposed to and they're around children. And they're like, oh, well, you know, that's. You know, what the hell is that?
Well, in the case of this clown in California, he was in his freedom protecting school. Because if you've got a place where you let people come and you know, I guess he started out in Taekwondo and expanded into disarming people with guns. And that's not to say that that's not a legitimate course of study. But you managed to shoot the preacher?
And they're okay with it. They're like, no, no, it's okay, because we can't give up our guns. Oh, no, it's not the guns.
Well, accidents happen, and you know what? We can't give up our freedom because of accidents.
Fuck that shit, man. You're just fucking dumbass motherfucker, man. I'm telling you, these people are ridiculous.
Well, I mean, see, but this is a journalism thing. In that story from Modesto, okay, you know what the reporter does not cover? And you know what none of these stories ever cover? And I think I'm the only person who ever talks about it. Who, you know, when someone has been accidentally Second Amendmented, who gets the bill?
We do.
Well, usually it's just the victim.
Well, right, who, right. Well, if they have insurance, it's a big mess. Exactly. It's a big mess.
It's a perverse form of Abbott and Costello. Who gets the bill? Every nickel of it.
Well, you know who ought to get it is the, you know what, but see, this is a hell of a
every one of these got it. Yeah, every one of those hospital bills should be delivered overnight express to the headquarters of the National Rifle Association.
They should. And the only reason I say that is because they pump up this weapon stuff. Because I don't know where I am on this. But well, I do know that this shit is out of control. And I do know that people are irresponsible. And I do know that, see, the very nature of a firearm is to be durable and rugged. Which means that if you take care of it, it's going to outlast you. So you don't need a whole lot of damn guns.
Okay, so how many stories are there in any given year of some freedom loving freedom protector, Second Amendment himself, trying to clean the gun?
Well, exactly. Oh, it happens. It's easy. It happens all the time. It happens all the time. They're just inherently dangerous. You should be afraid. Like, I haven't touched my weapon. I don't even think I've touched it in 2 years. I might be 2 years. I mean, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just not good. What do you do? But you know, not, and shotguns are different. You maybe a shotgun in the South or wherever you live out in the country, you need a shotgun in the house. Maybe.
Well, you know, I got to thinking about it. I've made that argument, and that's the argument you hear around here. I just decided I want nothing more to do with any of it.
Yeah, I could see that too. I, you know, well, I know somebody wants to talk to you, and the one thing I want to say is this is not even this is a total non sequitur. Next time, holiday season's coming up, so when I'm around my Republican friends and family, which I do have, you know, I'm going to ask them a couple questions, and we all have to be cognizant of what we ask them. And we have to remember when they say, well, he's a businessman, he can run the country. Okay. You're a businessman. The first thing, if you're a business, your first goal is to make money.
Yeah.
And the way our system is set up is to make money. And then, you know, if you fall, if you hurt someone, you let the courts figure it out. And that's just the way our system is set up. So that is totally antithetical to our Constitution. Because
the government is not a business.
No, it's not. And it's not made to be. And you know what? If the government, if you have a surplus, hey, it goes back to the people. But it's supposed to run to serve the people. We the people.
Well, I mean, go back.
Anytime you hear a MF say that, remind them the government is not a business. Because guess what? You start privatizing everything, what happens? They start cutting corners like everywhere else. Well, we had too much big government regulation. Yeah, that's why you got these trains derailing. You know, okay.
No, I get it. I get it, Todd. I so get it because that's the kind I'm reading. I've mentioned earlier a couple of times. I'm reading a wonderful Roman history by a woman named Mary Beard, who is a brilliant, brilliant scholar of the time and the era. And she talks about how as Rome went from little local republic to basically worldwide empire for the world as they understood it, that they didn't have the government to cope with it. And they tried to cope with it sort of on an ad hoc basis along the way as they went. The Romans, who were, of course, adored by the founding fathers, were almost helpless to prevent themselves from falling into miserable, abject governmental chaos because they did not have the governmental structures they needed to run a big country.
You know, they needed bureaucracy.
They needed the administrative state. They needed the bureaucratic state. And so, that, you know, I have no patience at all for these idiots with their, I'm a small government conservative. Well, how small, dumbass? Quick, I want an answer. How small?
As small as my...
As tiny as my tiny little brain. But, I mean, do you want the roads paved? Do you want your precious military? Do you want the Social Security and VA checks to go out on time? How about the WIC payments?
No, Bob. That's when you get the look on these the people in the interview. They're like, "Who are you? Some kind of communist?"
Like, oh, you're one. Well, I bet you like that Obama.
Well, anyway, I hope you have a great evening, and I'm going to keep listening. And so I hope people continue to subscribe, and we got to keep this family alive, right?
Yeah, we do. We do. And, yeah, it's tough when we get in holes. But thank you, Todd. It's always a darn pleasurable conversation. And thank you for the context on the Friends School. I really, really appreciate it.
No problem. Friends Select is downtown. The other one's out in the county. Yep. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Have a good night, man.
Talk to you later.
Later. Bye. Our buddy Todd calling from behind the cornpone curtain down in South Carolina, Stan. Before I go over to the stress line, a note coming in from our buddy Horst in Taiwan. Horst says, under the subject line, banning Twain, in the introduction to one of the editions of Huck Finn I read too many years ago to remember which one it was, the editor explained that a reason, it was my impression at the time that it was the original reason, but I wouldn't stand by it now, that Huck Finn had been banned then was supposedly because of the section in which Huck decides that he'll go to hell rather than turn Jim in as a runaway slave. I haven't heard that one mentioned yet, so I thought I'd throw it in there for some more historical context or whatever. I think it fits Horst both as historical context and as whatever. I don't know how it stands up factually, but I have an easier time seeing an offense against 19th century religious sensitivities causing a book banning than any sort of racial epithet. Well, no, that's the whole thing. In the 19th century, the use of that word in the book was not a big deal because everybody used it, and yet, so what? I mean, that's what the word was. But I remember reading that, too, and I'm glad you brought it up, Horst, because there's a larger problem there. It's the religious overtone of Huck Finn saying that he would rather go to hell than turn in a runaway slave who was his friend. But it's also the idea that it is in its own juvenile way a manifestation of civil disobedience. Because, you see, there were lots and lots of people at the time who were choosing to go to hell rather than turn in a runaway slave. It was called the Underground Railroad. And there's no doubt that at the time that he was writing this, Twain was aware of what had transpired before and during the Civil War in that regard. And so it was also a religious objection based upon the fact that that right there, St. Paul, who invented Christianity, said, slaves, obey your masters, which by definition means nobody should be out there helping slaves escape either. And, of course, remember, St. Paul writes that in about, 40 of the Common Era. And in 73 BCE, you, of course, had the Spartacus uprising, in which the entire Roman world got the pants scared right off of them by the idea that their society, which ran entirely on slave power, was maybe in trouble. And so Paul Saul writes that as a way of trying to reassure the Roman world that, no, we're not like that Spartacus guy. We don't even look like Kirk Douglas. See? Yeah. All right, let's run over and check in with Jim in Nevada, Stan. What's happening, Jim?
Oh, just enjoying your always enlightening monologue. And when it comes to dialogue, it's still just as enlightening. I was thinking what you were mentioning about the Freedom Protector issue. That reminds me when I was working back in when I had that little gig back in Louisiana, Stan, the little grocery store.
Yeah.
I told you about the time about the young couple with the two little kids, and it was quote unquote kind of a rough area, so they came up with the genius idea of getting Freedom Protectors for each one, and he was, of course, cleaning up the gun and ended up shooting himself and one of the little kids, but he didn't kill himself or the little kid, but, and I remember when the girl, we both got guns, I'm like, you do have two kids, one's like four, and one's three or two, they were real young, it's just, right away, the fact that you're more likely to shoot somebody in your own house than shoot somebody. I don't put some statistic on that twice.
Oh, sure. I remember a million years ago, Jim, when I was in another world. We had a guy. He was a roughneck. I mean, he worked in the oil patch, and he was rougher than a cob, and drank a lot, and he'd had some problems, and his kids had been moved out of the home for a while, but he tried to straighten himself up, and he and his wife tried to get their act together, and they did, and got their boys back into the home, and then one day, and there was never any doubt that it was an accident, one day one of the boys shot him point blank with a .410 shotgun that he'd given the boy for as a gift, because, we do that here in Appalachia. Son, you're growing up now. Here's a box of condoms and a box of shotgun shells and your very own 410. Now, 410, I mean, you know, you come from the culture, too, in your own way. Down there, it's similar to up here, only y'all got better food. The 410 is a relatively small shotgun. Yeah, it's not like a big old 12 gauge or 10 gauge goose gun or something. It is deemed in these parts and probably down there as well as a young man's first shotgun. And of course, something awful happened. Because even with that shotgun loaded with four shot. You know, it may have gone in like a ping pong ball, but it came out like a cantaloupe. Dispersal, you know.
Yeah. I gotta explain. I've never really messed with guns. I have no inclination to. But the other thing I was going to touch on, change the subject real quickly, was. That actress you were talking about, the one on Northern Exposure?
Yeah, Jeanine Turner.
Yeah, she was the one, real cute one with the short hair, great little figure, right?
I was trying to avoid all that by saying that she was the ingenue.
The what? Okay. Yeah, well. Yeah,
that's French, you know.
Well, Paquito, parlez-vous français.
Oui, oui.
Huh?
No, I did that during the break. Go ahead.
No, but anyway, she—I remember seeing her a year or two ago, something on, you know, because movie stars, they, you know, it, particularly the woman, you've got to look. You might have one chance at making, you know, getting on. Very few people can hit that stride of becoming a Jane Fonda. Or there's the male version, the Robert Redford, or, you know, there's a certain kind of stature. If you get one good series, that's it. And I notice a lot of them get kind of sour and turn, or maybe they're just conservatives and they just don't make it. But I find it kind of weird when they don't get success, how they'll get the conservatives.
Well, you know, there's another one, that woman, what's her name, Patricia Heaton, played the wife to Ray Romano.
She was religious before that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, but she turned into some sort of right-wing maniac.
Well, you got that. You got Tom Selleck. You got, what's his name? He's been in a lot of movies, but he's kind of got that. The guy used to be a bartender, but he was in 12 Monkeys.
Bruce Willis.
Yeah, Bruce Willis. But I guess something. You know, I don't care for that kind of view, but I guess they just they're going that way. Yeah, maybe that's the way they're already set. You know, and then they talk about the supposed like almost a Hollywood mafia keeping everybody quote unquote liberal. Because that's what the repressed conservatives of Hollywood will say. I mean, have you ever heard them say that or claim that?
Yeah. Sort of, yeah. Yeah, I mean. I admit I try to avoid, you know, Hollywood gossip kind of stuff. But if you're a wingnut in Hollywood. You're immediately awarded your very own personal cross, and you carry it with you. And anytime anybody brings you a cold cup of coffee, you declare yourself a persecuted conservative and jump up on your cross and start getting nailed right in.
Yeah. Well, that just makes it harder for you to get work, I would think. Because why do you want to deal with a jerk? It's like Tom Selleck. He's got. Some show he's on now where he plays some sort of, I don't think he's the star, but he's got, you know, some sort of role. I mean, that's the other thing. If you're an actor, unless you really are they want. You've only got a limited amount of time before you look, and that goes for a man too. It's not as bad, not as badly as for a female. Before you look, start, next thing you know, you're playing the grandfather. It's just like Al Bundy, that was David O'Neill.
Yep.
He started off like, that show for Married with Children. And now he had 1 year with that, the Dragnet, redo. And then I found him lately on the repeat. I just catch the repeats of that, that show that's funny as hell with,
No, I can't remember the name of it. Yeah, he's the grandfather, right?
Yeah. But he never heard anything about his politics or anything like that. I think most people like that out in Hollywood. I guess it's kind of weird. I notice that when they squawk about it, and when I heard you talking about them earlier, the world must not be a cup of tea at the moment. So maybe I think me and the rest of the Horn family should say a little prayer for her. You know how good those atheist prayers work out.
Couldn't we just maybe drink a shot for her or something like that, or maybe have a Christmas cookie for her? It's equally effective, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll finish this hamburger I got.
You're in the spirit. You are in the spirit of the season. You'll finish that hamburger you've got there. For Janine Turner.
Well, as they say in the church, the son genius plays Bob.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
Bob.
Beware of Bob. It's like that sign that was on Facebook the other day. I got to get one of those. Put it up in the studio. Jim, you take care.
Okay.
We'll talk to you soon. Be good, man.
All right.
Bye now. Bye. Our buddy Jim calling from Nevada Stan. And hey, look, it's the Angry Indian.
Hey, my man.
What's happening?
Oh, I don't know. Tell me. I just got back here. I missed about a good half hour of this. What Jim have to say?
Oh, we just carry on, Jim and I do. He was just riffing on the stupidity of that Janine Turner woman and PC political correctness is destroying America, and if only we could say that word as much as we want to, America would be great again.
I don't know what the fuck happened with her. I saw that. Darth Vader was in the Bible. Oh, okay.
I got breaking news, though. Carol tells me that in the kiddie table debate, she said, fuck me running. Huckabee just said that in order for the left to claim they're Christians, they must renounce the constitutional separation of church and state. She then noted, this is why mommy drinks.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I had to look for it again, but I found it on Wikipedia. The actual reference in federal law relating to the Constitution, where you cannot bring up fucking religious testing, religious questions, religious faith, religious any goddamn thing.
Yeah, it's in the Constitution.
In regards to political office.
There shall be no test for religious test for office.
Yeah, so, the fact that we're even discussing this and the fact that the press and the Congress has allowed them to get away with this, let alone Scalia's fucking, Supreme Court, that already shows you how off the fucking rails we are. What's the point of having a fucking rule if nobody's going to fucking follow it?
Well, there's that. But, at least it's on the books, right?
Well, so what? Anti-racism shit is on the books. Has been since the, 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, fucking, whatever. Right? Amendment? Mm-hmm. Of that great constitution that these paleo conservatives like to wave around. All the time. All the fucking time. This is literalism in spades. Well, the United States isn't racist. So what are you talking about, man? We're watching shit every day here. Look at this. It's happening in San Francisco. Mary Woods. The United States isn't racist. All right, you keep saying that, but what are you talking about? Well, it's against the law here. And I'm like, yeah, so that's it. So your argument is false. There's no racism here because it's against the law here, and there's civil rights laws that have been passed, and Barack Obama's black. So, your argument is completely false.
Yeah, right, because, see, I don't think John Roberts would have ever had the nerve to gut the Voting Rights Act if he couldn't say, well, see, we've got a black man living in our White House. Obviously, there's no more racism left in America.
Hey, a whole lot of people said it. Bill Bennett, Rush Limbaugh, Piyush Jindal. I mean, they all said it. Racism is over. You can't say the United States is racist. We've passed that bar already. So, you know, but what type of black man was elected? You know?
Yeah, I mean, he has a center right one.
Yeah, he's center right. He was, as I said, you know, all you have to do was go back into the fucking Rolodex here or Microfiche if you want to go down to the library if you can't find it online, because it is online. He was John McCain's fucking protege. He was John McCain's protege. He wasn't hanging out with the left wing, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. He was hanging out with the middle of the road Republican Party. So, you know, he came out of Chicago. We all know how fucked up Chicago is. Oh, well, look at Rahm Emanuel. Yeah, we got an idea how fucked up Chicago is. We can go back to 1968 and talk about how fucked up Chicago is in terms of the Daley family. You know, Chicago politics have always been dirty. So just because he's an African politician from Chicago doesn't mean a fucking thing. He's still, you know, what he is. He's a machine animal. He was backed by Goldman Sachs. That should say enough to people. But, you know, folks who got, you know, well, because we're seeing this already with Hillary Clinton. I would rather see Hillary in than Bernie Sanders because Hillary's a woman. Okay, so you're not actually going to deal with what she stands on. No, I'm going to vote for a woman this time.
And it's time. I see angry every time I hear her declare that it's time for a woman to be president. And I go, yeah, Elizabeth Warren, that woman. Now, every time I hear it, I have this internal struggle that I admit to. And, you know, maybe I'll wind up getting lectured. And that's okay. I mean, I'm up to being educating. I'm open to it. But I don't. And this, I mean, I can't help but come from the space I come from. I come from a white male space. Okay? And maybe I'd feel differently if I was all pro Hillary. But when I hear, you know, it's time to elect me because I'm a woman, that's like me saying I should be, you know, I should have 5 million listeners a week because I got blue eyes.
Well,
I mean, isn't it?
Well, in a way, you know, I mean, it's a little bit like how I was going to say what you brought up. I mean, you know, you're right in terms of, you know, Darth Vader, this whole thing with the statement that was made by the sister. But the thing about it is where that's coming from, though, is usually the black cat dad died first, right? He saved all the white people, then he dies.
Sure.
He jumps in front of the... the band Jim Bowie and shit at the Alamo, right?
Have we let Will Smith be in a movie where he gets to kiss a beautiful Hollywood starlet, ingenue? We're going to use ingenue a lot tonight. Right on the mouth, and we get to see him naked and stuff. Because that hasn't happened yet, has it?
Not as far as I'm aware.
Not Denzel. No, not him either. Sam Jackson. No.
But I understand where she's coming from. I mean, yeah, she might be reading into it a bit much, but so were the fucking neo-Nazis. I mean, everybody, who, you know, I remember when it came out because I went to see it in the fucking movies with my friend and his father. He took us to go see this shit. I didn't even know what the fuck it was. I never even heard of Star Wars. And, my friend was a sci-fi buff. So, I went. And, okay, interesting story. But I didn't read all this other shit into it. I mean, I thought it was cool, but that's it. But people have turned that and the fucking Matrix into philosophies, right? So, okay, we're going to look at this and really overanalyze it. Okay, let's look back a little bit. When that fucking movie came out and it was released in the regular newspapers, because I suppose the sci-fi press had already talked about this, that James Earl Jones was the voice of Darth Vader, because a lot of people, including me, didn't even think about that. I was a kid. So, you know, motherfucking, you know, there were white people who were pissed off about that. There were black people that were kind of proud about it, right? But there were a lot of white people, I remember, who were angry about that. You know, who was, well, what the fuck?
Not the least of whom was the guy who was actually in the costume.
David Prowse. Now, see, a lot of black people thought that David Prowse was black.
Quit it.
Who don't know anything about British media. Yeah, a lot of folks. You know, just like Nick Astley, you know.
Well, I'm still convinced that Rick Astley was a voiceover. One of these days we're gonna find the dude that actually sang that.
Well, hey, man, I don't know. You know, homeboy from the Doobie Brothers, he got over like that. A lot of sisters were like, he's black, man. I don't believe you. Right? So, you know, we have these confusions.
Oh, Michael McDonald?
Michael McDonald. Yeah, yes. A lot of sisters dig him. Rick Astley, too. You know, because race isn't the thing for them. They like the way they put over the motherfucking song. They
well,
like
okay, them. So let me take us backwards just a minute, Angry. Maybe we're coming at it the wrong way. And let me see if I can process through to make sense out of what's swarming around inside between my ears. We see black and white, darkness and light, all that stuff that Janine Turner was babbling about, because it's a part of our ancient, largely European heritage, because, you know, that was transposed onto... onto African slaves that were kidnapped and brought here and everything, all of that. We don't have an appreciation of how other cultures treat not skin color, but color itself and the meanings of colors. Mm. Witness the fact that we have this vision of ancient Rome, ancient Athens, okay? Hell, ancient Memphis, ancient Alexandria, as being these austere places done up in white marble, and everybody just walks around. I mean, really, you're going to live in an arid desert climate, and it's all just going to be blindingly white? People would be walking into buildings in a week and a half. No, the ancient Egyptians were in love with color. All of the ancient peoples were in love with color. They painted everything. They painted the columns. They painted the walls. They painted and painted and painted and painted. And so and so the whole area was just rich with color. But it is we, through our distant lens, who make it a monochromatic world. And so the history and the myths talk about the battle of the battle of light and dark, the battle of good and evil, yada 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 yada. And maybe the mistake, And I think we unconsciously or subconsciously acknowledge that mistake, Angry. Maybe the mistake is in referring to people of color as being black. I have yet to meet a human being who is black.
You have.
Now I'm sitting here looking at some mic cables. I'm looking at some paint on some components. I'm looking at a darkened screen, and those are undeniable. I'm looking at a button, and it is black. Here's a knob, and it's black. But I've never met a person that color. By the same token, short of a few genetic anomalies, I've never met a person who is white. And both of those, and those constructs are much later in time than the construct of black bad, good white. And in fact, there are native cultures here in the Western Hemisphere for whom it was the exact opposite. I mean, do Roman Catholic priests wear black because they're bad?
No, I always thought it was black because it gave a certain level of authority and power.
Well, yeah, and it's a hell of a lot easier to launder. You know, there's only one guy gets to wear white in the Catholic Church.
All right. Well, since you brought that up, there's a couple of things that we kind of do need to clear. Now, in terms of, you know, albinos, I mean, yeah, obviously something's going on there. Like with red hair, doesn't mean they're not human beings. But obviously, they're lacking any melanin at all, wherever they happen to be in the world, regardless of nationality, ethnic, genetic predisposition, whatever the hell.
I mean, that's why I refer to myself as pink, because I am. I'm not white. I can hold myself up against a piece of paper out of the goddamn copier. I am not that color.
Well, that also has a lot to do probably also with where you are geographically. If you were someplace else, you know, it would be a different situation, at least to some degree.
If I was up where my ancients well, I mean, we all started out in Africa, but after a while of hanging out somewhere up near the Arctic Circle, we lost our melanin, okay? We didn't need it. In fact, we needed not to ward off the sun, but to absorb as much as we could so that we could have bones that weren't so friable that they sounded like popcorn when we walked. But even then, still, not the color of a piece of copy paper.
Well, again, you know, just for clarity's sake, because I know a lot of people say this, and a lot of white people say this who don't have a lot of personal experience with African people outside of the United States. There are people who are damn near literally black, and I'm not kidding about that.
No, I've dated
a couple.
No, I've seen those people. I rode a train with someone like that from Brussels to Frankfurt, and he was from Cameroon.
Yeah.
But you know what? At the end of the day, he was not the color of that goddamn mic cable.
No, yeah, I dig what you're saying. You know, but at the same time, you know, humans are going to identify however the hell they're going to identify. And since you brought this up, just for the fucking hell of it, I mean, I recently had to get some blood work done. And I never really thought about my blood type or what have you. Never really paid any attention to it because when I was younger, it was an issue. But it hasn't been since, you know, I've matured. I'm Rh negative. Now, I don't know if you know very much about this, but there's not there's not very many of us. Supposedly it's an exclusive club. And evidently this is where my Semitic or my European bloodlines tie into, because there's a vast Jewish link with the Rh negative blood factor. So, and there's all kinds of crazy Alice Jones conspiracies about that shit too, because it's connected to the Basque, who have the oldest DNA in Europe. But they're not considered white by Europeans. You dig what I'm saying? They're considered pre-European.
Right, because white is a construct.
Right, so, you know, but they consider the, you know, the oldest people in Europe, you know, the most indigenous people in Europe. They can't be traced to the migrations and all this type of shit. Nobody knows where this DNA came from. So here I am identifying as African, Native American, Filipino, Ashkenazim, right? Because those are the terms that I can use that make any goddamn sense. But genetically, if I'm Rh negative, what the fuck does that make me? If you're a conspiracy theorist, I'm not even really a fucking human being. They talk about us in relation to aliens and shit. And I never looked any of this stuff up, but because we had a conversation, we just happened to look it up. And I was like, oh, Basque. All right, well, I've kind of been told that. That makes sense, you know, grandfather. But the rest of it, I was like, wait a fucking minute. Wait a minute. Okay, so the little things, you know, my eye color, you know, shit like that, it explains. But the concept of race doesn't really fucking apply, right? So, you know, where would somebody put me? People look at me and say, oh, yeah, nigga, right? If they have experience with Spanish-speaking people from different parts and not just Mexico, they might say, okay, spick nigga, right? But, you know, genetically, I don't relate to any of these motherfucking people, probably, if we really, really get down to this. So, you know, when you have these kinds of conversations, where do we go? What is, you know, ethnicity in relationship to geography, in relationship to nationality, which again has to bring up relationships to religion? I mean, how many Western Europeans claim Christianity as their religion when this is really a belief system that's from Western Asia? How many white people practice Vodun or Voodoo, right, who have no genetic fucking relationship at all to West Africa? None. Zip.
Well, my personal favorite are the white Rastas.
Well, but see, the whole thing about Rastafarianism, though, it has that racial component, but just like a lot of these faiths, you know, I mean, it's all based on racism, reactions to racism, but even with that, there's the concept, even in the 5% movement, there's the concept of the real human being. And that means that white person has to basically strip their whole fucking ego. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
not
take the weight for all of white racism, but just to be like, hey, I'm not a part of that shit. I don't live in that. I don't accept that, and I reject my white privilege. And when it comes down to push and shove, I'm on your side, right? And, you know, how many white people are willing to do that? Now, I'm not talking about these cats who twist their hair and you have to buy the goop online or what have you, because their hair doesn't twist like that. If I just don't fuck with mine and let it grow, it's going to do that. But, you know, their shit doesn't do that. But there are some white men
I've met. No, see, I just let my hair grow. I wind up looking like Riff Raff from Rocky Horror, okay? I mean, it just is what it is.
Oh.
It's, okay. It's not pretty. It used to hang in, you know, ringlets and curls and stuff, but not anymore. Now it's just straight up riffraff.
Yeah, but you get my meaning.
Oh, I do.
They've gone through the process. You got the Arabists. I mean, you know, you got people who have left England and France and went to the Arab world and said, fuck, you know, I can really be a human being here. Fuck Europe. You know, you've had Chinese now that are going to Africa, marrying African women, having children, right? They see themselves as African now. They're accepted by the people, at least, you know, who they deal with. They say, fuck China. I can't, you know, China's too much. You know, it's I can't deal with it.
Well, I mean, that just to give you an idea, and it was cute. It was kind of funny, especially given what had gone on the previous 24 hours. I needed a laugh. The gentleman from Cameroon on that aforementioned train asked me if I was German or Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
It never entered his mind that I was American, and that was fine by me. But I said, no, je suis
American. Yeah, but what did that make you think about yourself, though, in terms of how someone looked at you? Yeah, or was
right. I mean, apparently I was among my people, so to speak.
But it's entirely possible.
I looked at him and I said, no, je suis American. And he gave me that look. Really? Oh, yeah. And
well,
so
where you go when all this fucks up.
And then, you know, when we got to Germany, I mean, it was really weird because they were having a heat wave like unto nothing they had ever had recently. It was the third week of May, and it was already up in the mid to high 80s. And there was a reclaimed rock quarry pit or something outside of town. And we went there and, you know, put on a pair of board shorts and you can hang out. They bring in, you know, there's sand there and everything, and you hang out and drink good German beer and really good Würsten and everybody there was paler than me, angry. And I had never, I mean, it's one of those things that makes you think about your own life experience. This may sound completely prosaic or maybe even silly to some people. I had never been in a place where I was not the palest person there.
And how did you feel?
Well, that was the thing. I was, on the one hand, it was like, is this, I'm going to get in trouble. I was having my Alex Haley moment, okay? And I was, because I was looking up going, is this where we came from? Is this my origin? And to a certain extent, it is. Although in my case, you know, I've got parts of me that are English, which probably means that there's some Angles and Saxons and Jutes in there. And so, yeah, that's where we come from. And the other part's Scottish, and they wind up getting...
That's Viking.
That's yeah. Viking. And you know what? Honestly, the intellectual response was for me to want to look around and go, will you people please put on some goddamn sunscreen? You're going to get hurt. I've been there. Look at these freckles. I mean, it was like statuary in a museum. Again, with the paint, but you get the idea.
Well, look, you know, I mean, the color thing is really, you know, skin color as opposed to, say, features.
Well, I think I don't even call it color. I call it tone.
Well, yeah, but it, you know, but colorism, you know, is.
I mean, Donald Trump is a color, and that color is orange. All right.
Well, that's because he's just, you know, fucked up all the time. He's got bad energy, man. That comes out.
No, that's a tanning bed. Come on, I don't even think he used a tanning bed. I think he's just got those ultraviolet bulbs over his desk or whatever.
Well, I don't know. I don't even give a fuck about Donald Trump. I mean, other than the fact that he's a dangerous son of a bitch. But, you know, part of why Donald Trump is in the position he's in right now is because we've never really had a conversation like this in public, in the open, a real conversation. It's just been white people saying, don't blame me, or I want you niggas and fucking Jews and fucking chinks and spicks out, right? And black people, you know, the majority saying, look, you know, yeah, I know you fucking hate me, but I still want to be here. And the other, you know, minority saying, man, I'm tired of you motherfuckers too. I want either my own shit or send me the fuck back to Africa, right? And within these two groups, you have these, you know, within the people of color group with this the dichotomy, they're at each other's throats all the fucking time. But they're not really fighting the fucking people who are fucking with them, see? And the 5% that actually do that shit aren't supported by any goddamn buddy. Now, on the other hand, with the white group, and I'm being general with all of this, but in the white group, well, yeah, you know, my cousin so-and-so is fucked up. He's a really bigoted son of a bitch, but I don't hate him. And I would never fight against him. I mean, that was the whole big thing about the Civil War. They always wanted to remind us poor brown children when I was in fucking school that the Civil War, that white people shot their brothers over you. You know, and that you owe us. And you always will motherfucking owe us because we killed each other over you. Even though the shit really wasn't about us at all. You know, you had Russians that came in and fought on both sides. Irishmen that came in and fought on both sides. Germans that came in and fought on both sides.
Sure.
You know, Belgians said, fucking, well, I get a piece of land after this shit. You know, they came in and fought on both sides. They were trying to get their own fucking piece. They didn't even know what the fuck a black person was. You know, I mean, there are letters.
Yeah, but you know what the Irish in New York did because they rioted their asses off.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But even then, they were already hating on black folks any motherfucking way. This was just an excuse.
Yeah, this was just an excuse. Just, you know, just to sort of drag us up into the... into the incredibly shallow present. I guess you saw in the last day or so the right-wing furor that broke out when Sports Illustrated named its person of the year.
Oh, yeah. Well, the comparison to the horse was enough to make my wife drop her jaw drop. I thought she was going to drop her fucking cup of tea, man. You know, she was like, they did what? I said, yeah, they asked which should be on the fucking cover. Sister or this fucking Equus. And she's just like, I can't believe they fucking did that. And I'm like, yeah, they did that. And, you know, we can blame Trump for that shit, but it was already there. He's just opened the fucking door and said, hey, it's permissible now.
Right. So, I mean, just so people know the background on it. First, Sports Illustrated puts out a poll and says, who do you think? And it's an online poll, which means it's unscientific. There's no way to make it, you know, legit.
And it doesn't mean any goddamn thing.
And it's utterly meaningless and says, who should be Sports Illustrated's person, sports person of the year? And they gave the choice, and I don't know who else was in there, but it was it came down to Serena Williams or the horse, American Pharoah. And American in the readers' poll, American Pharoah won going away. Okay, it wasn't even close. So Sports Illustrated then made Sports Person of the Year Serena Williams. And when you read the article, as I did, our pal of longstanding, dear friend, Sandra sent it to me and said, I guess Whitey wanted the horse.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Let's see. Columnist Brian Zipsy at horseracingnation.com was outraged. He said, American Pharoah won the Grand Slam and Serena Williams did not. Once again, thoroughbred horse racing has been denied by mainstream sports media. Sports Illustrated, your agenda is showing. Why would you give an award to something that does not have the goddamned cognizance to understand that it's getting an award?
Because it's not a black woman.
Yeah, right. Anything but a black female, okay? I mean, can't we give it to a sea monkey?
I mean, you know this, I know this, everybody who can, you know, write out their motherfucking rent or mortgage goddamn payment and shit and keep their credit cards from fucking crashing, you know, fill out a fucking application, you know that they're supposed to put on their fucking indicator before they make a left or a right turn. We all know this. But when you're dealing with fucking fear and anger and folks who are used to being on top of the fucking world. Because the whole idea is, when you're looking at this presidential fucking election, it's like when you look at them all, but we never fucking worried and sweated like this before. Whoever wins this shit controls the planet. Now, I have my fucking faults with Barack Obama, and I've said it in print. So that's why it gets mad, you know, I get mad when the fuckers talk about, oh, well, you just don't care because he's a black man, you support the fucking Democrats. Kiss my fucking ass. I never told you I was a fucking liberal. Ever. Not once. Not once. You know, I'm indigenous. It's not the same goddamn thing. And, you know, liberalism and conservatism have their fucking place. But in the United States, you know, terminology, concepts, all that bullshit, you know, it's ridiculous. The amount of ignorance that's here. But whoever fucking wins this, if people are really comfortable with the idea that American white bigots are that fucking selfish, that they're willing to let a complete self-centered fucking moron take the reins of power, the power of the U.S. motherfucking judiciary, the power of the motherfucking, you know, entire process, the power of the fucking military, the power of bullying the fucking U.S., the power of telling fucking Israel what they can and can't do. If you really want that kind of bullshit to go on with a complete fucking jerk who insults Saudi princes, who tells motherfucking people that, you know, well, I don't want, you know, black people counting my money. I want Jews counting my money. That Mexicans are rapists, that women are fucking stupid and need to fucking, you know, be basically like my fucking wives, showpieces. I don't like immigrants unless I'm marrying them. If you want a motherfucker like that up there, a complete fucking slob, then go ahead and vote for Donald Trump and don't do anything.
But yet the fact remains, Angry, and it is a fact that even though Adolf Hitler has received 81 minutes of coverage for every 1 minute that Bernie has received in the for-profit media, Bernie still has a vastly higher numerical support number than Trump can even dream of.
And the mainstream corporate press is doing their damnedest to make sure that the fucking people don't know that the people support what the fuck Bernie Sanders is about. They would rather have Hillary because they know that Hillary's going to do what the fuck her husband did. I remember this. He said, I'm a pro-business candidate on C-fucking-SPAN-2. And I listened to what the fuck he said, and I believed him. And NAFTA and GATT proved out what the fuck I was talking
about.
The
era of big government is over.
Is over. Shit, man. You know,
But you know what? I want that quote chiseled into the plinth of a statue of a hungry mother and child, and I want that statue placed right goddamned in front of the White House. Okay, the era of big government is over.
It should be in front of the next DNC convention
because they've been at war. You know, that was just an adoption of a right wing talking point. That's the kind of stuff. You know, the for profit media and these ignorant, always wrong jackasses who show up on Sunday saying, "Well, you know, that Barack Obama probably could have gotten more done if he would have reached out to Republicans and worked with them a little more often." But you know what? He could not scrub his skin white, Angry.
Nope.
And it doesn't matter how, but you know what? And that was, you know, look, Bill Clinton stood there and shook his knuckle at us and said, "The era of big government is over." And the Republicans still impeached his philandering ass, okay?
Because they're fucking extremists. Here you have...
They are an insurgency, goddammit. I mean,
Call it. Call it what it is. That's right. Call it.
It's a fucking insurgency. And the scales fell away from my eyes when the sequester went down.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, look at them. Oh, no, we're gridlocked. We can't... But by God, those senators and those members of the House, Republicans, Democrats, didn't matter a damn... When it turned out that they couldn't get on a plane and fly the hell away from Washington, D.C. to get away from that madness, by God, they fixed that little sequester problem in a shutdown hurry.
Hey, Dana Rohrabacher, this is how ridiculous the fucking Republican Party is and why Trump is where he's at. Action star, even though he really needs to just fucking stop, goddamn Steven Seagal, right?
Please.
He's in and out of Russia. Putin and him are supposed to be fucking homies. They swapped spit. He took a fucking Dana Rohrabacher. He's a fucking congressman, right? he and a couple other goddamn Republicans went over to Chechnya with fucking Steven Seagal because supposedly he can give them an inside view of what's happening in Chechnya that Putin can't fucking explain to them. And the GOP pushed that bullshit around, and all the freedom protector jerks over here in Oregon were talking about how Steven Seagal is going to show the Republican Party how they're supposed to do foreign policy.
Hey, I do the voice. Damn it, Angry, I do the voices around here. I got to protect the brand. Quit that.
Oh, sorry. But anyway, that's the bullshit they were talking. Because these are not people from fucking the Pacific Northwest. They're from the South. They're moving over here because the League of the South said, we can take over the Pacific Northwest. Ain't that many niggas there. If we go over there and have kids, we can take over. So there's a bunch of them over here. That's why there's so many goddamn Confederate flags out here. And these motherfuckers are like, well, Steven Seagal. I'm like, Steven Seagal's a goddamn wife beater. He's a fucking jerk. He's a macho fucking fool. He's a jerk.
Oh, well, you know, you like that, you know, that pussy stuff, you know.
It's like,
yeah.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah. Well, Chuck Norris, okay.
Chuck Norris, he's another one. He's a fucking jerk. He's gotten crazier as the fucking years of goddamn
my combat. Personal favorite, did My Name Is Bill W.
James Woods?
Yeah, James Woods.
Who injected himself into the 911 motherfucking thing. So did Charlie Sheen. So, you know, these are white conservative males who have basically lost their fucking belief in the system. So since they can't be king, they want to tear it the fuck down. They're not about reforming any motherfucking thing. They talk about the Constitution while they violate it every goddamn day. You got the Army of God out here, which, as far as I'm concerned, is a fucking terrorist organization. Robert Deere is their latest motherfucking operative. All right.
Yeah, but we can't investigate them as terrorism because fetuses, right? To go back for a minute, just to back up for a second to the Serena Williams thing. Of course, there was the usual chorus of. She only got that award because she was black. And by the way, Gerald tells me, hey, don't stop Angry. That was good. That was a great Goober impersonation. And it was. It was really good. So we go from there to a little moment over on the Fox Business Channel. And their latest outrage of the day is that Michelle Obama helped out in a music video by Jay Farrow from SNL. Encouraging people to go to college, and she did that rapping thing, and she took away she completely destroyed all the dignity of the first lady.
Kiss my beautiful brown fucking ass.
They brought in Tammy Bruce, who is a complete. Oh my God, she's like listening to an unoiled chainsaw, and she said it's disturbing. We're telling kids, and we should, maybe vocational school is better. Maybe some people, you don't need college. Clearly, people who are graduating from college are probably thinking they didn't need college. Kids are getting swamped with debt. Nobody has a job coming out of college, and yet this is a push for you to go to college. I'm not quite sure what they hope is going to happen here. Some say it's like renting out the Lincoln bedroom. This was Elizabeth McDonald talking to, some strange person named Webster. She said, we're telling kids and we should, maybe vocational school is better. Maybe some people, you don't need college, clearly. Oh my God. And then, some say it's like renting out the Lincoln bedroom. It's a bit demeaning.
Well, fuck whoever that is, because, we just had a sitting Supreme Court fucking justice who we can talk about the Italians in America. Okay. Let's go back to Philly. Want to talk about the Italians in America on how they call fucking wops and grease balls and fucking swarmy bastards and go the fuck back where you came from, macaroni? You know, these motherfuckers couldn't get a fucking job because they made the assumption that anybody that had a vowel at the end of their fucking name was in the mafia. Couldn't even fucking clean toilets, Italians, right? So here's Justice fucking Scalia talking about that the fucking white schools are too fast for the fucking little burrheads. So we need to keep them, just like Uncle Ben Carson, keep them down where they're at. Don't pay them any more than you do, because that's going to ruin every goddamn thing. Don't give niggas any motherfucking thing, man. Leave them in the corner. Let's fucking forget about
them. Yeah, but hold up. But that's the thing. Hold up. It wasn't don't give them anything. It was don't let them have anything they freaking earn. Okay? The students who are in admitted, the black students who are admitted to the University of Texas Tier 2, under the University of Texas's Tier 2 system, do as well or better than their white counterparts admitted under Tier 1.
Yeah, but don't tell Abigail Fisher that.
Well, hell no.
She'll take you to court, goddamn. Like that James Backey. Remember that motherfucker?
Yeah.
Remember that case. I fucking remember that shit. He had fucking black students freaked out all over the goddamn country, man, talking about whether it's worth it or not to even try to go to college. So some fucking white guy that's nowhere near your fucking GPA can say, well, they let that motherfucker in because he's black.
And, you know, I'm sorry. Every person of color in this country can't go to Howard. Now, a lot may want to, but Howard has limited, they've got limits on the number of people they admit every year. And so, you know, the University of Texas case was deeply disturbing, angry, and even more so. And I mentioned this last night on the program. You've got the New York Times covering for Scalia, quoting him as saying something he did not say. He didn't say the slower black students. He said all of the black students need to be going to less well-funded, less academically rigorous institutions.
Well, see, I don't want to cut you off, but there's an important thing to bring up here with this. Now, there was a movie called Trick Baby that was based on a book by Iceberg Slim, the famous L.A. pimp, right? What it was about, basically, and I'll make it short, it was taking place in Chicago. It's about these two con men, younger cat, black man named Blue, who was, you know, working with his white pal or white looking pal, Trick Baby, right? Or at least what people called him. You know, because in the black community, you know, I was called that and I'm not going to get into it. But basically, you know, if you were the child of a prostitute.
Right. No, I got it.
Right. So, you know, motherfucking, but it could be said about any light skinned black person if people wanted to be mean. So he passed enough for white that they would do, you know, cons on people thinking they can trust the white dude trying to protect them from the shifty nigga, and they would rip these people off and split the money up, right? They were tight. They, you know, he grew up under this man. This man damn near raised him and brought him into the game. But the point I'm trying to make is there's a scene in the film where people are sitting and, you know, some white folks are having dinner, and they're like, look, we got to make it tough for these motherfuckers, because if they pass and they realize that they can do, then they're going to challenge us for our fucking situations. And this is where the liberals are a problem, because the liberal tells them they got a right to at least try. So what we really need to do is just let a few get by, because the handful, like Uncle Ben Carson, they get through, like, you know, fucking, you know, or Alan West, you know, pick any of your motherfucking
Herman Cain.
Any of them. Herman Cain, he wants to be number one, but, you know, Carson beat him out this year. And, you know,
Clarence Thomas,
who is Donald Trump's favorite justice on the Supreme Court. He wanted everybody to know that it wasn't Scalia or Roberts, that it was Clarence Thomas.
Right, because Clarence Thomas never says anything.
Never. Well, he says something when it comes to writing a fucking decision against a black man who was handcuffed to his goddamn cell and beaten within an inch of his fucking life, that wasn't a civil rights case. He can do that. But the bottom line that I'm trying to get to is, the average white person who is, like, say, and I'm not trying to diss anybody, but, you know, Joe Sixpack, he goes to work, or if he has a job, they're not sitting around thinking about necessarily how to fuck up everybody and keep shit, you know, going. He just doesn't want to see any Negroes at his goddamn pub, okay? But people who have money, like the Koch brothers and Donald Trump, they sit there and they do maneuver like this. You can let a few of these by because they're kind of like the angry Indian, you know. They don't know if they're really black, if they're really native, you know, but they identify with white people and shit, and they're not stupid. So you can't really leave them in that community because, as they said in the movie, if you leave these smart Negroes in their own community, they can cause a fucking revolution. So it was better to bring them on our side. Give them a white woman, give them a car, give them a job, make them a little comfortable and shit. And then, you know, he will protect us as a buffer against the fucking crazies who just want to cut our throat because they're angry. They're not thinking about anything. But if they had any kind of leadership, we'd be done. And that's what the whole fucking Trump campaign is about. If you don't fucking have a white resistance, the niggas are going to take over, because we just had a nigger president for two goddamn terms. How much further are we going to let this go? That's what this shit is all the fuck about.
Got to take our country back.
From who? You never lost it. Take it back from who? You know, it's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Okay,
you
so I got something here, and I think you'll hear it. I got a little sound clip from last night's Trump rally in Vegas. A little sound clip here. Now, it's at one point in time. Let's keep things in order. Let me see if I can get this to go. Listen, I'm not telling you, but here.
Light the motherfucker on fire.
You got that?
Oh yeah.
that was a man of color who raised his voice in objection to the racism and bigotry that is Trump and his followers. He was immediately taken to the ground by some black jackets. And you heard the hollering and carrying on there. And in particular, did you hear the one guy screaming, light the motherfucker on fire?
On fire. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, but see, there's no racism there. It's really Black Lives Matter and fucking the Reverend Al Sharpton and the Reverend Jesse Jackson that is their fault.
Well, and see, as he was being dragged out of the building, another Trump supporter yelled, Sieg Heil.
Heil. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is nothing fucking new. Nothing fucking new. But we're dealing with a lot of white folks who are in a lot of fucking denial. Look, it's just like a lot of, you know, people who are, you know, oh, I'm cool. I'm okay with gay folks. Hey, you shouldn't be like that to that gay guy. I'm not going to talk to you, man, because you were mean to a gay person at my last Christmas party, right? Well, I just found out that my daughter doesn't know what fucking gender she is, and I'm flipping the fuck out. It's different, right?
Yeah. Or, well, just to take something that I mentioned briefly on the air last night, and this stuff, and I don't say, if I say something scares me, I mean that it causes me fear of some sort. It's not one of those phrases I just throw around. And
no, you know, responsibility.
We've had two kids, 18, 19 years old, from this community, in less than a month, kill themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, these little white kids, because this is a very white little community, and there's not a whole lot of people here, so. It reverberates like a big rock thrown into a very tiny pond when it happens. And I look around at this stuff, and I try to, well, I don't know, and I look at this dead, dying, coal-fired community, and I ask, is this the future? Are we living in the future now? And I'm scared to death that the answer is yes. Because these little Appalachian communities, we got nothing for our kids. Black, white, brown, it doesn't matter. We got nothing for our kids. We got no schools. We got nothing to divert their attention. When they get to be that old, we got no jobs. But you know what we do have? We got places where you can go and buy fake weed that will turn your mind into goddamn taffy.
Mm-hmm. There's heroin out there.
There's pills.
Meth. And alcohol, always. But you belong to an ethnic group amongst your white brothers and within the schema of fucking, you know, racialism within North America, within the Anglophone world, that who gives a fuck?
Right. It ain't no thing. You know, meanwhile... we got a legislature that's gonna sit down in January that has no more ideas now than it did last time. The only thing on their minds are making sure that people who are making $60,000 a year goddamn well make 20. The only thing on their minds is making sure them Syrian refugees can't come here. Mm-hmm. The only thing on their mind is making sure that that more people are carrying more guns into more Walmarts. And they've got their noses so far up the fundament of the coal industry that their nose hairs whistle working in a coal mine every time the West Virginia Coal Association boss breaks wind. And when I say that that's the kind of thing that scares me, that's the kind of thing that scares me. And you know what? From where I stand, that's not going to be a problem that's going to be a priority with any of these godforsaken Republicans. Pray about it. It'll get better. Shut up.
No, but Brother Bob,
it's also not going to be a priority of Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton. The only person talking about the stuff that's going to matter for creating a future for kids who are 18 and 19 years old right now is Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, but see, if Bernie Sanders gets in, a lot of that gets leveled out. A lot of their profits go out the fucking window. They need to have white people on the fucking edge not being able to make it. That's the only way that type of fascism can get in. Well, really, let me correct myself. That's the only way fascism grows any goddamn way. It grows out of, you know, the masses.
And it grows out of the anger of the masses.
The anger of the masses, feeling that they deserve, because it's their country, whatever the fuck, they're the largest ethnic group and they're not having. The Jews are still in business because they were trading in gold and doing other fucking deals because they had to survive in an alternative economy because of the racism against them anyway. When we talk about the Pale, when we talk about the small Jewish communities that was put aside in Eastern Europe, there's a reason why they survived after World War I when the Versailles Treaty fucked up the rest of Germany. Because they were already used to living that goddamn way. They couldn't count on the mark to survive. No. So they couldn't say to themselves, well, we did this to our fucking selves. No, let's blame them. Let's blame the gypsies. Let's blame every fucking buddy else around.
Well, that's why I said the other night, unfortunately, we got to get out of here. I think we could do this for a couple more hours, Angry. That's why I said the other night, find me a time in American history when there has not been some other against whom the majority population has not been driven and encouraged to direct their hatred. When Flavio asked me Friday night when I was covering for Mike Malloy, I think that's when I said it, that this country, you know, we can turn away from the hatred of a Donald Trump, and it's not a majority hatred, but it's a plurality hatred. But we can turn away from it, but that group is not going to. Because hatred of minorities, be they people of African ancestry, be they Jews, Italians, Irish, indigenous people, whatever, it is baked into the very essence of this country. Is it not?
Yes. That's unequivocal. I mean, there's nothing to discuss. Where'd the Indians go? They just went away. God gave us the land.
Well, it's
we don't
like
know
that,
what happened.
Okay,
to.
So, you know, full circle. It's like that. It's like that. That Dick Cheney quote. My ancestors were the Puritans, and when they got here, no one was here. He said that.
Well, the British said the same thing about fucking Ireland.
They and
said
Australia.
The same thing about Australia. Ain't nobody here. You know, one black, one white. Same fucking problem. Support the Bob Kincaid Show. Peace.
Later, Angry. And we are. We're out of here. Thank you. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, for helping us with fundraising this evening. We will find ourselves tomorrow evening trying to raise $380. It was a wonderful Titanic Tuesday. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Be well. Prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. Thanks to everybody, to all of you, who make this, who give this its own reason for existence. In oh so many ways, thank you. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.